231, House Bill 174, and House Bill 238. And with that, Mr. Speaker, I move the House resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. Representative Haley.
The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill is House Bill 231 for our consideration. Oh, wait, the first bill for our consideration is House Bill 231. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 231, introduced by Representative Laux. Firearm possession, allow felons antique firearms, an act relating to firearms. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 231, firearm possession, allow felons antique firearms, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Byrd, Crank, Ayer, Gray, Greer, Lindholm, Laux. Noes, Representatives Claussen and Henderson. Signed, Representative Greer, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Greer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises reported, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 231 do pass. There is a standing committee amendment, and I'll handle that. I'll move standing committee amendment number 1. To House Bill 231, and I'll explain that quickly before I turn over the bill. So, folks, with this bill, the sponsor, who will explain the bill, brought us a pretty good bill, but he had a reference in there to the U.S. Code. And our committee felt that it was better that we kick out legislation out of this body with the definition set out in our statute rather than a reference to a U.S. Code section. And as an attorney, I very much appreciate that because I don't want to open up the green book and then look and then have to go over and look in the blue books to find out what something means. So if you look at Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, what it does is it takes the definition that was set out in U.S. Code of what an antique firearm means and sets that out in our statute rather than a reference. So what I would do is I'll ask any questions on that, but I prefer to just call for the question and turn over the full explanation to the sponsor. So, I'll be just a minute.
You have heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. Are you ready for the question?
Question.
Having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? This amendment has been adopted. We're back on the bill.
All right. Oh, you're doing good, Mr.
Yeah,
Chairman.
Boy.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'll turn the explanation of the bill over to the sponsor, the fine gentleman from House District Number 59.
And Representative Lux.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate that. And that amendment was a great amendment, and thank you for bringing it, Mr. Chairman. So the nature of the bill is pretty simple. I was approached by a constituent that had been doing his diligence trying to find out if he really could hunt with a muzzleloader or not. And he talked to many, many people, and including the department that oversees hunting, sheriff's offices in several counties, police chiefs, and we all had a different story. In fact, the department itself said that, yeah, it was okay, and several sheriffs said, yeah, they allow people to hunt with muzzleloaders that are felons. So once we got into that, we realized that it wasn't okay. And so this bill, all it does is allows people that are felons to hunt with an antique or replica firearm, basically called a muzzleloader, and it is in the federal code 921 that is totally, it is okay. It's in the federal code. So all we're doing is copying the federal code, putting it into our statute to allow people to be allowed to go hunting with an antique firearm, to take their families out and to harvest game in the state of Wyoming. So I can go on with this for a long time. I think we're short on time, and I just would ask for any questions.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question. I know the federal agency that regulates firearms has some issues with some of these modern percussion-type firearms. Does this address that or not? I'm just curious.
Mr. Speaker?
Representative?
Yes, it does. It's in the federal code. In fact, during the dialogue for several months with this individual and with different law enforcement people, it was actually the BATF agent right here in Cheyenne that really knew exactly what was going on. And he pointed out very strongly, in that section, there's a series of rifles, inline rifles. A lot of them are listed by names and model numbers. They're allowed some guns, like a certain kind that you can interchange barrels on it regularly is not allowed. Anything that is in line would not be allowed or is interchangeable with a barrel that would shoot, say, a shotgun cartridge or a center fire or a rim fire cartridge. They are excluded.
Chairman Northrup.
Thank you. So please turn your attention to the bottom of the amendment on Romanet 2, and it says, uses rimfire, conventional centerfire, fixed ammunition, which is no longer manufactured in the United States and which is not readily available in the ordinary channel of commercial trade. I'm asking the question, so if I find some World War I or World War II ammunition and the rifle that it goes in, then I'm cherry to go, right? I can go hunting?
Representative Laux.
Mr. Speaker, Chairman, to be honest with you, I don't really understand that last part there, but the bottom line is, okay, we've got somebody who will be explaining. This still has to be a muzzle-loading rifle, so that's a little weird.
Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So specifically, you can see on the amendment that's brought, right in the center of the amendment on 17 and 18, is not designed or redesigned for using rimfire or conventional centerfire fixed ammunition. So that's anything with a built-in or pushed-in primer. This is only for percussion. This is old-school equipment. World War II equipment, World War I equipment does not qualify. This is specifically exempts out anything like that.
Question has been called. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The bill passes. House Bill 231 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Okay. Oh. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 291. Reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 291, introduced by House Appropriations, Department of Health Facilities, an act relating to Department of Health Facilities. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 291, Department of Health Facilities, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, and Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman.
Well, it's your pleasure.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it does so with a recommendation that House Bill 291 do pass, and I will turn the explanation over to the good representative from the big wins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You may want to tell them that they'll find this in their bill file. It won't be in their file for general file today.
It will. This bill will be in your bill file if I'm telling that correctly from the majority floor leader. The state health, particularly for the new members of this body, the State Health Facilities Task Force was created in 2014, then reauthorized in 2015 and 2016 to look at the condition and the purpose of the site of the five state health facilities, which would be the State Hospital in Evanston, the Life Resource Center in Lander, the Pioneer Home in Thermopolis, the Retirement Center up in the Bighorn, in the basin where Bighorns are at, and the Veterans home over where the good chairman of revenue lives. And this last Friday we just completed the level 3 design for the construction and the renovation at the Wyoming State Hospital and the Wyoming Life Resource Center. The task force, who is required to report to the Labor Committee and the Appropriations Committee, has recommended that the State Hospital and the Life Resource Center move from the Level 3 design into construction phase. The Appropriations Committee is bringing this bill forward to authorize the Governor and the Department of Health through the State Construction Department to move forward with the construction and renovation of these two facilities. This bill will appropriate all of the remaining funds set aside for this project, $135,200,000, from the existing state facility construction account to the State Construction Department, and as well appropriate the remaining funds that were used from the $9 million appropriated last year for the Level 3 design to the State Construction Department, and that amount is $4,938,956.06. This bill also adds $4,300,000 in appropriations to this project. The Level 2 study estimation and for this project was $149,155,000. At the time we started setting aside appropriations, much like we did for the, as we're getting ready to do for the prison, we set aside $145,700,000 as a placeholder pending the Level 3 design estimates. And of course the final bid that would come in for construction. The $4.3 million puts us closer to the Level 2 and Level 3 design estimate. Upon approval of this bill, the remainder of 2017 will be to complete the drawings for construction, preparing bid documents and drawings, requesting scopes of qualification for contractors, and receiving bids and selecting contractors. The anticipation start time for construction would be as soon as possible in the construction season in spring of 2018. So, Mr. Chairman, that's this bill in a nutshell, and I would be open to any questions.
Got one.
Representative Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So just a question, and just kind of a, I guess, give that perspective of why this actually task force was implemented. And if you look at the top of page 8, we do have a state building commission. And I guess what would their role be once this task force is complete? Or what is their role now, and what is their role in the future? If I recall correctly, the State Building Commission is the five top elected officials. So this is a little different. We've had another project that was undertaken with a different format, with the legislative branch being kind of at the forefront of it. This is the second one, I would say, in my tenure here. And just give me an indication of when the State Building Commission actually starts accepting responsibility or doing their role, which is for every other, I guess, facility in the state. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, and thank you, good Chairman of Labor. This task force was created initially to review and to look and make recommendations back to the legislature on what the condition of the state facilities were and what we thought that the mission of each of those facilities should be moving forward, which was basically a policy issue that this body makes. We came back in 2014 with some recommendations that we move forward and look at a level one and level two design for the Life Resource Center in the state hospital. That governor's task force in 2015 was converted into a legislative task force to still, at that time, we were still really developing policy and determining how those facilities should move forward, and the recommendation from that task force back to the Labor and Health Committee, as well as to the Appropriations Committee. When we got done with the Level 1, Level 2 study, we moved, last year, we moved into the Level 3. That was still, and that's where we kind of entered into the transformation of moving from a policy issue to what should be the executive branch's role of overseeing construction. So in this bill, you'll also see some legislative language that really kind of redefines the responsibility of the task force in ensuring that the executive branch is in charge of making sure that that this moves forward and issues the contracts. This last year in the task force, the legislation that we received last year in the budget bill really kind of give the task force some authority that we were a little uncomfortable with, and upon recommendations of LSO, as we reported back to both of the committees, the Labor and Health and to Appropriations, it made sure that we included the executive branch in. So as we went forward and we needed to enter into contracts, we made sure that we contacted the governor's office, made sure that he provided a letter stating that it was okay to enter into those contracts. Then there was an executive work group created that the majority of those people were from the executive branch that then made those decisions, looked over the contract, selected the bidders, and then they just reported back to the task force saying this was the direction that they were going. We started in the spring of this last year to report also to the State Construction Committee, which you're right, the State Building Committee, which is the five elected officials, the good chairman of revenue here, and the majority floor leader of the Senate. And so we really tried to start defining that distinct line going from policy into executing the contracts and doing those things that really are the executive branch's responsibility. And that is further explained in the definition or the legislation defining how this task force moves forward to make sure that the executive branch is in charge of that.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? Okay, question being called. All those in favor of Representative Nicholas's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it does so with the recommendation that bill number 291 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay. House bill 291 has passed the committee of the whole.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Please move House Bill 288 to the bottom of the first page. So our next bill will be House Bill 174.
Okay. I need somebody up here. I'm going to talk on that bill.
Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 174. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 174, introduced by Representative Clem. Game Roadkill, an act relating to game and fish. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 174, Game Roadkill, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass, with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Blackburn, Edwards, Lindholm, Lone, Sweeney, Zwanitzer. Noes, Representatives Byrd, Ayer, and Furphy. Signed, Representatives Zwanitzer, Chairman.
What is it? You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Pro Tem. I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 174 do pass. There is a standing committee amendment I would move at this time and turn over the explanation of the bill and the standing committee amendment to the good representative from House District 31.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, I bring to you House Bill 174, this is Game Roadkill. The Standing Committee Amendment, I think if we can get that out of the way, and then we'll talk about the bill a little bit more. But what the Standing Committee Amendment proposes to do is it deletes some language in regard to the Game and Fish Commission. We do have the Game and Fish Commission involved in this bill, but this particular amendment, the committee felt it wasn't needed. And so if there's any question, I'd stand for questions. Other than that, I'd call for the question.
Is there any discussion on the Standing Committee Amendment? Question having been called, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no.
No.
Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mrs. Speaker Pro Tem. All right, members, what we've got here is Game Roadkill, and really the impetus behind this bill is it's really allowing people to collect carcasses, if you will, or if you were to hit an animal, and to put that animal to beneficial use, whether that's taking it home and eating it yourself, or if it's feeding it to dogs, turning it into dog food, or if it's feeding it to your pigs or livestock or whatever. But the idea here is that it simply allows for you a legal means to collect these carcasses and put them to beneficial use. So if you'll see here on page number 1, we talk about what the commission shall do. And it says in page number 1 on line 12, the commission shall, in consultation with the State Transportation Committee, adopt rules to establish a program whereby any person desiring to possess wildlife killed as a result of a motor vehicle collision on any public road or highway in the state of Wyoming is permitted to do so, provided that he possesses one of the following. And that's the key. So there's 3 different ways where you could go ahead and collect roadkill. The first way is on line 6, little I on page 2, a letter of prior authorization from the department. Letters of prior authorization may be available through the director or any person or entity which commits to putting the roadkilled wildlife carcasses to a beneficial use. We actually, this was heard in the committee TRW 2 years ago, and at that time we actually heard of groups who actually do go and clean up the roadways and take these carcasses, and if they can put them to a beneficial use, they do so. And so that would be one means. The second means to collect roadkill would be on line 12, double I. It is a valid scientific or educational collecting permit for the specific species issued pursuant to Wyoming Statute 23.1302A13. Or, and the last way we put on here is triple I, on line 16, a donation certificate or Wyoming Interstate Game Tag issued by the department, including a certificate or tag issued through electronic licensing. This is something that we felt was new. And members, it was this last spring I was going fishing with my stepdad, and I realized I had not yet bought a fishing license. And the nice thing that I was able to do is I was able to take my cell phone, and I was able to purchase a license right over my cell phone. In fact, I still have the picture on it to prove that I had the license. And really what we're doing is we're saying the same thing, that you could actually go on Game and Fish's website, that you could apply for this, or not apply, but get this donation certificate. These donation certificates, by the way, are free. A person desiring to possess, and this is on line 18 at the end of that, a person desiring to possess a roadkill animal shall contact the department before taking possession of the animal to obtain a donation certificate. The rules may provide, and that's the key thing here, members, is we're allowing the game and we're allowing the commission to really have some oversight and have some rules on how this is implemented, okay? So what does this not apply to? If you look down on page 3, on line 5, none of the provisions of this section shall apply to bighorn sheep, gray wolves within an area of a state where gray wolves are classified as trophy game animals, grizzly bears, mountain goats, wildlife species covered under the Federal Migratory Bird Treaty Act, federal threatened or endangered species, or those species whose possession is prohibited by federal or state statute or regulation. So really, members, what we're talking about is we're talking about deer, we're talking about antelope, we're talking about elk, things that you would commonly find on the side of the road. Nothing in this section shall authorize possession of any illegally taken wildlife or wildlife found dead due to other causes than a motor vehicle. If you go on to the next page, really the rest of the bill talks about transportation, and of course this just covers you as far as transportation. If you're transporting this the animal back to your home or wherever you might be transporting it to. With that, Mr. Chairman, I think that's a good explanation of the bill, and I'll stand for any questions.
Representative Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll keep this brief. A lot of members in this body have heard this same bill 5 times, and it's been defeated before it got out of the legislature, and there's a reason for that. Probably foremost is the transmission of disease. We have CWD down in this part of the state. We don't up in the northwest. So this bill would allow somebody to take an animal there. Likewise with brucellosis. We don't have brucellosis down in the snowy on the mountains to the west, and they do in the northwest part of the state. They've recently found an Asian louse that's been in 2 different parts of the state, and these deer, it's a biting louse, of course, and so these deer have rubbed all their hair off and ultimately succumbed to the infestation of louse. As far as the dog food and pig food, I'm not going to address that. If somebody wants meat, they can go to any ranch locally and during calving or lambing season probably get more than they want. Currently, if somebody wants one of these roadkills, we have scientific permits, which we issue to a lot of different entities, but I'll just use the university over the hill as one for their students doing scientific studies. We have donation coupons, which addresses most of the issues that this bill addresses. And on special circumstances, we have another receipt form that we can issue. The cell phone app or being able to access the website, I can't speak for the whole state, but one geographic area that I was very familiar with for 40 years is very limited in cell phone reception. So what are you going to have the guy picking up whatever he's hit or found alongside the road? And then lastly, you know, this is just one more layer of bureaucracy that the Game and Fish has to deal with. And I can tell you from past experience, this issue's been dealt with on a local level in every region of the state trying to figure out the best way to administer it. And there is no perfect way. There's 51 law enforcement officers for the department that manages the wildlife. You could get not that many differing opinions, but several. So I encourage you to vote no in this. If nothing else, is to prevent the spread of these diseases that we currently have in Wyoming.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry I missed this in committee, but here are the questions I would have asked. On page 2, line 16, is there any limit to the number of donation certificates that can be acquired? Is the electronic licensing available 24/7? And is the availability for the inspection of the animal available 24/7? And the reason for the last two questions is very few people hit these poor animals in the middle of the day between 9 to 5, Monday through Friday. Thank you.
Representative Lindholm, were you waiting? Oh, Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just to answer those questions, so we, I think the very first question by the good last speaker asked about page 2, line 16, talking about a donation certificate, and is this limited in any capacity? And I would say that it's not limited. So we've actually heard in testimony, I will just say that we heard in testimony of a family in Colorado who would regularly pick up roadkill. It wasn't roadkill that necessarily they had hit, but roadkill that they had utilized. And so this would be one thing that they could do. So it's not limited in that respect. I will say this. There was some current concern that, what if you have someone who just is going out and just trying to hit animals just to hit animals? And we heard that, however, and that currently does happen even right now. And those cases are prosecuted. And so really, that alleviates that. I don't recall what the last two questions are, Mr. Chairman, and if the good speaker would care to ask those again, I'll try to answer those.
I got it.
Mr. Chairman, we talked about 24/7 inspection. And again, this is one of those things that the commission that deals with fish and game here in Wyoming, they can adopt rules on how they want to actually do this. Currently, right now in Wyoming, members of the public are not allowed to take these animals at all for any reason. That's an internal policy decision. Wyoming, at one point, you were able to do that, and there were some wardens that did allow you to take these animals, but they no longer allow you to do that, except in those cases where you might have someone who uses these animals for scientific purposes or educational purposes. But we were told in committee that's not the case, that they can currently do that now.
Representative Clem, did you want to speak on the bill? I'm sorry, Representative Lindholm. Chairman Eklund.
I do have a question on the disease part of it, because brucellosis is a problem we're trying to isolate up around the park up in the northwest. I'm wondering if a person brought an amendment to limit the area to like a 50-mile radius of where the roadkill happened, and I think that would address most of the people who wanted to take these things off the road and use them for whatever. And I'd consider bringing such an amendment to assure that I'd never hear this bill again.
Representative Lindholm, do you finally want to say something?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Sorry about that. So on your first page, the commission shall, in consultation with the State Transportation Commission, adopt rules to establish a program. Specifically, what we're talking about is rules that can be adopted by the game and the fish and game outfit so that cannot happen, that transfer of brucellosis. Already that's a concern with those that are hunting in the state of Wyoming, transferring those game from their hometown or from where they're hunting back to where they're from. And already the game, the Fish and Game outfit has rules promulgated to protect against that. So the argument that brucellosis or these other diseases could be transferred across the state flies in the face of what we're already doing with our hunting and fishing. So on and for the bill. Thank you.
Representative Edwards.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. In the area that I came from, I do know some people that had the big white sheepdogs that they have out guarding their sheep, and a lot of them regularly fed to their sheepdogs antelope and deer that were hit on the highway. And I'm not going to tell anybody who they were or how they got it, because it's probably illegal, but they do it, and I don't see a problem with it. Leastways, they have a beneficial use for them. We had another guy up in my hometown that hit a deer on the way home from the mountains to the west where I live, and he threw it in the back of his car, and whenever he got to town, he went to the game warden's office, and he asked him if he could have that, and they wrote him out a ticket for taking a deer out of season. I don't remember what all the rest of it was, but I thought that was pretty sorry. So I think this bill is a good bill, and I voted for it in the committee and will when it comes up when we're done speaking on it. Thank you.
Chairman Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. So I'm just going to go through a couple of questions. The first question is bottom of page 1, line 14, says any person. So my assumption is this would apply to a person who had lost their hunting privileges in the state of Wyoming. And sometimes those folks, there's a good reason why they have, obviously. And so that'd be one question. Applies to everyone, therefore those folks would be eligible. Unless you're giving the commission those authority to eliminate them. So there's my question. The second question I have about the authority you're giving to the commission is, are you going to allow them to charge a fee for the donation certificate to deal with the administrative cost of potentially having to inspect and verify, because you gave them that potential authority as well. And the final, the migratory thing and all that, that's fair, but maybe what we actually should do is say what we will allow to be collected, what is appropriate to be collected, also in the bill, or in some point, give guidance to the commission that oversees this so that they can say this is what is allowable. Final thing I guess I would say is from a disease perspective, and we've been hearing about wildlife to livestock diseases, but let's keep in mind zoonotic diseases. Some of the diseases we're talking about in the wildlife population are actually transmissible to humans. And if there was a concern I would have, that would be the concern I would have. It's certainly the concern that my profession has when we consider ownership of wildlife. Finally, I would ask, how do you actually, unless you're the instigator of the death, how do you know an animal was killed by a collision? Because that is the only opportunity here. So there has to be some level of knowledge about how the animal died. And if you travel the highways in northeast Wyoming right now, and you look on the south side of a lot of snowfields, you will see sometimes solitary animals in a emaciated state that are suffering from the winter that we're having. And you can have in other parts of the state too. So they're certainly within the roadway, but their cause of their death, I think, would be a little more ambiguous than roadkill, unless they stumble down the hill in their last gasping breath and land on your car hood. So, a couple questions. Thank you.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. I have a peanut gallery back here. In answer to some of the questions, all right, so I'm going to try to take it from the top here, and if I forget some of the questions, forgive me, please step back to the mic, and we'll see if we can answer these. So the first one is this open to everyone, and does the Game and Fish Commission currently have the authority really to limit or how these animals are collected. And we left some broad language in the bill. And we heard in testimony yesterday that indeed the Game and Fish, based upon the language that's currently existing in the bill, that they do have really broad authority that the commission has in order to adopt rules and regulations on how this program is implemented. I heard another concern about disease, and again, we have hunters and anglers all throughout the state. We have hunters that hunt in areas where you have chronic wasting disease. Hunters harvest those animals, and then they take them home, and then they eat them. It's something that currently happens right now. And there are provisions that the commission takes in order to help the spread of disease and so on and so forth. So, again, I think this is something within a commission's purview that they could certainly handle. I'm at a loss on what the other questions were. There was a lot of them there. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Chairman Zawana, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. One of the other questions was motor vehicle incidents and how do we know it got hit by a motor vehicle? And I think that's a very good point. We actually put that a portion of the statute in at the request of the agency a couple years back because they wanted to tighten it up, and I've never been certain. So if the bill makes it to second reading, you will see an amendment to take that portion of it out. I think everything else the good representative said. And maybe only one thing I did want to refute. This is the third time this body has seen the bill, and never once have we officially voted to kill it, nor has it didn't make it through a committee in the other body on a 2-2 tie vote with one sick member 1 year, and it just didn't get heard the other year. So I don't believe at any time through an actual vote this bill has been voted down anywhere in the process. It just usually runs out of time.
Anyone else wish to speak on the bill? Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Zwanitzer's motion that when the committee of the whole rise to report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill 174 do pass, please say aye. All those opposed, no.
No.
Division having been called, all those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. You can sit down. House Bill 174 having failed standing vote, roll call vote is required.
Are you ready? Okay. Allen. Yes, on the bill, 174. Allen. No. Baker. Aye. Barlow. No. Biteman.
Aye.
Aye. Blackburn.
Aye.
Aye. Blake.
Aye.
Aye. Bovee.
No.
No. Brown.
Aye.
Aye. Burkhart.
No.
No. Bird.
No.
No. Clausen.
No.
No. Clem.
Aye.
Aye. Connolly. Pardon? Connolly? No. Court.
Aye.
Aye. Crank.
No.
Dayton.
No.
Edwards.
Aye.
Aye. Eklund.
No.
No. Ayer.
No.
No. Flitner.
No.
No. Freeman.
Aye.
Aye. Furphy.
No.
No. Giroux. No. Gray.
Aye.
Aye. Greer.
No.
No. Haley.
No.
No. Hallinan.
Aye.
Aye. Halverson.
Aye.
Aye. Henderson.
No.
No. Hunt.
Aye.
Aye. Jennings.
Aye.
Aye. Kinner.
No.
No. Kirkbride.
Excused.
Larson Lloyd.
No.
No. Larson Dan.
No.
No. Lindholm.
Aye.
Aye. Lone.
Aye.
Aye. Laux.
No.
No. McGuire.
No.
No. Madden.
No.
No. McKim.
Aye.
Aye. Miller.
No.
No. Nicholas.
No.
No. Northrup.
No.
No. Obermuller. Obermuller.
No.
No. Olson. Excused. Paxton.
No.
No. Pelkey.
No.
No. Pieperinen.
Aye.
Aye. Pannell.
No.
No. Salazar.
No.
No. Schwartz. Schwartz.
Aye.
Aye. Summers.
Aye.
Aye. Steinmetz.
Aye.
Aye. Sweeney. No. Walters.
No.
No. Wilson.
Aye.
Aye. Winters.
Aye.
Aye. Zawanitzer.
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Speaker.
No.
No. Closing vote. Are there any changes? Miller, no to aye. Brown, aye to no. Hunt, aye to no. Nicholas?
No.
Oh. Other changes? Closing vote. The vote is closed. 23 aye, 35 no, 2 excused.
Pursuant to House Rule 10-5B, House Bill 174, having failed roll call vote, is indefinitely postponed. Chairman Northrup.
Thank you, Speaker Pro Tem. From a world-renowned museum, in the back of the fishbowl, we have our Director of Museums, Bruce Eldridge, and his wife, Jan. Give him a help. Hand. There we go.
Privilege of the floor.
Yes, privilege, please, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Fellow members of the 64th, I'd also like to welcome Leadership Johnson County is with us today. Let's give them a big hand coming down and learning what we're doing. Thank you for coming.
Representative Paxton.
Mr. Chairman, privilege of the floor.
Go ahead.
One of those particular students that just stood is one of my former students, and I can't tell you what her last name is because she wasn't married when she was in high school, but Casey, would you stand up, please? If you want to know anything about what kind of a teacher I was, ask her.
Majority Floor Leader Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Privilege of the floor.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to introduce, it's not often we get people from that county in the center of the state. It's a 10 on your license plate, not a 1. And we have our new community college president here, Brad Tindale. He's been in Wyoming a few years, but he's recently been appointed as president of Central Wyoming College. Welcome.
Are there any other privileges? Representative Greer, or Chairman Greer.
Mr. Chairman, I'm here for the next bill. No one comes down to see me.
Okay. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 238. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 238, introduced by Representative Connolly, nude image of a minor disseminated or possessed by a minor, an act relating to crimes and offenses. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 238, nude image of a minor disseminated or possessed by a minor, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Byrd, Claussen, Crank, Ayer, Gray, Greer, Henderson, Laux. No, Representative Lindholm. Signed, Representative Greer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Greer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises reported, do so with a recommendation that House Bill 238 do pass. There is a standing committee amendment. I think I'll dispense of that very quickly. I'll move standing committee amendment number 1 to House Bill 238. Ask for your favorable consideration. I'll go ahead and have the body turn to page 3, look at line 7. And we have within this section is sort of a safe harbor for kids in these situations. And that safe harbor is if they take steps to destroy the image or notify a school employee or law enforcement personnel. What we're striking on line 7 is the term promptly, and the committee's thinking behind that was it says took reasonable steps. We didn't think we needed to qualify that any further with promptly. So just a simple amendment, a cleanup, I think it makes it a little easier to follow provision of the law.
Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The standing committee amendment number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the explanation of the bill, I'll turn it over to the sponsor, Madam Minority Floor Leader.
Oh. Madam Minority Chairperson.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. All right, friends, I bring you HB 238, nude image of a minor disseminated or possessed by a minor. Otherwise known as sexting, and I have to tell you, I loved it when LSO, it was in my pending box. It was called SXXT, and then they came up with this one instead. But I want to start by telling you a little story. All right, you all met my son when we were sworn in. He was here, if you remember him. He was kind of the big guy over there with a beard. What some of you know and others don't is that he makes his living as a stand-up comic in New York City. And like many stand-up comics, what he does is make fun of his mother. His mother does not approve. But I'm going to tell you a story about him. Okay. So when he was about 13, his whole class was able to go to the northeastern part of the state. And there's a great school there, and they do science. It was wonderful. All right. As a mom, I needed to pack his things to go away, right? And for those of you still in your 20s, believe it or not, we didn't have phones and we didn't have cameras on phones. And one of the things I packed for him was a little disposable camera, okay? So he comes home, and lo and behold, I take in his little disposable camera and get back the pictures, right? And I have, it's winter, and there is a moose. And there are tracks in the snow of some critters. There's kids running around where they had their dinners. And then, all right, you can imagine, right? I have a picture of, he says it's one of the Dillons, not him, but pull out the pajama bottoms and the camera goes boop. All right, you're all with me, right? All right, I take in those pictures, get them back again, and of course what I do as a mom is I wag my finger at him, right? And I take the picture and I throw it away. Okay. Fast forward to today, right? What happens today is very different. All right, what happens today is very different. You know, instead of getting back a picture and ripping it up and throwing it away, we have kids with phones, right, that take pictures, like the one I just described, or lewd pictures of selfies in a mirror or who knows what, and they send them to each other. Okay. Those images are per se child pornography under our statutes. They are images of juveniles, minors, right, naked portions of their body. All child pornography is a felony in Wyoming, as it is elsewhere. Our child pornography statutes go back to 1999, all right, before the advent of cell phones, and certainly before the advent of what is commonly referred to as sexting. It's rampant in our schools right now. Our DAs, our school officials, have asked for help. What can they do? It is, they need some tool in order to let these kids know that this is unacceptable behavior and should be punished. On the other hand, no one wants kids to become felons and on a perpetual sex offender registry for life because of engaging in this behavior. So what this bill does is address the issue of sexting. It does so by setting up three categories and punishments that are associated with each of the categories. So at the lowest level is when, and again, this is only for juveniles, all right, only for juveniles with an image of a juvenile, okay? So in the third degree, it's a dissemination or possession of a nude image of oneself or himself. All right. It also allows for, as you heard with the Standing Committee amendment, an affirmative defense. All right. So this would be the example of someone taking a picture, all right, a lewd picture of himself or herself, sending it to someone who did not ask for it. All right. That person who did not ask for it is in possession. But all that person needs to do is delete it, or show it to, and we're going to have a committee of the whole amended, a person in authority, all right? And that person has no liability. That kid is not responsible at all right? So the lowest level is a possession or dissemination of a picture of oneself with an affirmative defense, and that is a status offense with a fine of up to $250. The next level, a second degree, is dissemination of an image of another nude minor, so not yourself. All right, so now you've taken that image and you've sent it to somebody else. A kid has done that. All right, that is a little bit stronger. Again, the penalty is a misdemeanor, a fine of not more than $500, or 3 months in a juvenile facility. First degree is disseminating or presenting a nude image when there's intent to cause harm through lack of consent of the depicted minor or when done without the knowledge of the depicted minor. That, again, is a misdemeanor with a fine of up to $750 or 6 months in juvenile facility or both. Okay, so again, it allows for a tool, all right, for our district attorneys that is not child pornography, which is a felony. And so I'd ask for any questions. And there, okay.
Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to dispense of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, if I could. And ladies and gentlemen of the 64th, if you'll turn to page 3 on line 8, you can kind of see it. I voted against this piece of legislation in committee for this reason. You can see on page 3, line 8, notify a school employee or law enforcement personnel. So I take issue with that because I think that puts school employees at a really high standard. I'm not saying they shouldn't be there, but I am saying that maybe we should have parents included in that aspect. So I got to work with the good minority floor leader on this amendment, and I think it cleans it up pretty well. And I'd also like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. Thank you to the majority whip. So if you'll see, we delete school employee or law enforcement personnel, and we insert person in position of authority. So that's already defined in statute under 62-301A4. Position of authority means that position occupied by a parent, guardian, relative, household member, teacher, employer, custodian, or any other person who, by reason of his position, is able to exercise significant influence over a person. I think that opens it up for these kids to be able to fix this situation and not be limited to who they can go to by statutory law. So with that, I'll stand for questions on the amendment.
Mr. Chair?
Minority floor leader.
Thank you. That is a friendly amendment, and we had a great discussion in committee about this, and this is a great solution.
Okay. Is there any other?
Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Barlow.
Are we still on the committee of the whole amendment? I apologize.
Dispense.
Is there any other discussion on the amendment? Are you ready for the question? Okay. Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Connolly's motion that when the committee of the whole rises, report it does so with amendment. Okay. We're on the committee of the whole amendment, number one. Okay. All those in favor of the committee of the whole amendment, number one, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment has been adopted. And we're back on the bill. Chairman Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I have a couple questions. First of all, I understand this is a challenge, and I agree with a new tool for our community to deal with this. My question is, why 12 years old? It seems to be a delineation within the bill. Everything is at least 12 years old. There's nothing for those less than 12 years old. So my assumption is that those folks are still under the existing law. And that leads to me to the second question, where minor is actually identified in someone 18 years of older, or under 18 years of age, under 18 years of age. And so if the person taking the image is under 18, is under 12, where does that leave us? Because there's at least several times in here. So they're under 12. I guess they're still subject to the felony, the way this is drafted, at least the way I understand it. They're talking about the individual that took the picture and disseminates it if they're under 12. The third thing, I guess, that my question is on bottom of page 3, it's a couple places other places in the bill, why the necessity for without consent of the depicted minor? I think by virtue of being a minor, you probably don't have that level of consent to something like this. So I would say that it would probably be best to, in a second reading amendment, have a discussion about striking the consent component, because we're talking about minors in this case. And even though we had a discussion in the last couple of days about allowing contractual authorities to folks that are minors, that was 17 and 18-year-olds, if I recall. And so I think those, just a couple of things there. Why 12? What about the perpetrator being under 12 or the victim being under 12? And what about the consent issue? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any other discussion on the bill?
Mr. Chairman.
Madam Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to answer those questions, the 12-year-old age in here is to capture the reality of sexting in junior high and senior high. The idea behind the 12-year-old age was that somebody having a picture of their baby brother and sister or something like that on their phone, that's not what's being talked about here. There's nothing in here about the perpetrator being under 12 years old. There's still that minor that's under 18, but it's over the age of 12 for the image that we're talking about. So that's the 12-year-old. The issue regarding consent makes the difference between the second and the third level. The second level is when someone disseminates an image of another, right? And that would be the moving it along. The third one is, and the assumption would be with the consent of others. So that's that kind of situation where someone takes a picture of themselves and is showing off, honestly, right? And I'll just use an example, girl takes a picture of her, you know, of her breasts and sends it off and wants everybody to see it, and everybody sends it along, right? You know, both that, don't make me laugh, that, you know, that girl is okay, you know, so in violation, and then the people who send it along are as well, right? That's with consent. The next level is when there is no consent, right? Get that image in some way, and there is no consent. That would be, for example, taking a picture of someone in the locker room, and that's totally without their consent. All right, that's meant to intimidate or bully, and so that's why there are those that differentiation regarding consent.
Oh. Representative Loan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, there's many studies been done in the U.S. that shows the average age at which children are now being introduced to pornography is the age 11. Should we not look at making this age limit of 12 a little bit younger than what it currently is? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Question?
Question has been called. All those in favor of Chairman Greer's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it does so with the recommendation that bill number 238 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? House bill 238 has passed the committee of the whole.
Mr. Chairman's privilege, please.
Representative Kenner, privilege.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We now have quite a few members of Leadership Sheridan joining us, so let's welcome all of those folks, and I even see a couple fellow bankers back there, so, hey, welcome.
The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 195. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 195, introduced by Representative Wilson. Quebec One Transfer, an act relating to the Quebec One Missile Alert Facility. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 195, Quebec One Transfer, respectfully reports same back to the House, with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Allen, Clem, Flitner, Freeman, Giroux, Haley, Halverson, McGuire, and Steinmetz. Signed, Representative Allen, Chairman.
Chairman Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that bill number 195 do pass, and for the explanation, here's the fine representative from House District 7.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Friends, I bring you Quebec One Transfer. This is the second step in a process that we started several years ago. And for those of you that are interested in this sort of thing, we could consider it the first small step in the transfer of federal land to the state. So, just those of you that weren't here, I'm just going to give a little bit of background. The missile alert facility is off of exit 39 of the interstate going north from here. If you drive by it, you'll probably miss it because it really looks just like a little house and a little garage, and even though I've been in it, I miss it. But it was built first in the 60s to monitor and control the ICBMs operated by the local Air Force base. Then under the president during the early 80s, the Peacekeeper missiles were installed there, and upon completion of the missiles, really that was one of the main reasons why the folks in the nation that has a lot of people named Vladimir decided to fold up camp and quit. So we can really, I think, recognize the importance of this missile site in ending the Cold War. So the site has been deactivated, and under the current treaty, all the missile sites of this type have to be dismantled and demolished. However, one of the sites can be retained as an interpretive and educational facility. So the federal group in charge of airplanes and all offered it to the state as a historical site. And in 2015, we passed a bill authorizing lease or transfer. That authorization that's already passed. So the purpose of this bill is because in that first bill, the governor was authorized to either to decide whether a lease or a transfer would be better, and if there was a transfer, the legislature had to approve the terms. So that's why it's back to us folks. They're actually ahead of schedule on cleaning it up and tidying it up and that sort of thing, and our congressional delegation is going to put language in the defense bill to carry out the transfer. So this bill is our side of the agreement. So if I'll just point out a few things. Page 1, actually, you'll notice line 8, we are amending current statute, so this isn't new. On page 2, it points out that if there is a transfer, it'll be in accordance with the following. Line 16, public hearing. There was a hearing already held in October 2015 with the local landowners and all people of interest, so that would then continuing on. Particularly important on the bottom of page 3, line 16, the federal government will retain liability for any environmental and reclamation obligations that have been identified already. And just to point out, there never were any missiles at this site, so we don't have the cleanup type problems. It was just the facility where the people pressed the buttons. So, folks, we would like to take advantage of this opportunity to have this transferred to us expeditiously, and I will take any questions.
Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Allen's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it does so with the recommendation that Bill number 195 do pass. All those, please. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
It passes. House Bill 195 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 250. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 250, introduced by Representative Wilson. Public Health Statutory Amendments, an act relating to public health. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 250, Public Health Statutory Amendments, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Barlow, Clem, Hallinan, Halverson, Lone, McGuire. Noes, Representatives Dayton, Garou, and Sweeney. Signed, Representative Barlow, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Barlow?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with the recommendation that House Bill 250 do pass. I further move the standing committee amendment, and I turn the explanation of the bill over to Representative Wilson. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just go through the bill and hit the standing committee amendment when I get there. So rather than missiles, this is more of a cleanup thing. You know, over the summer when I realized I didn't have any money to give anyone, I started reading the statute books and started with Title 35, because that's what I knew the most things about. So if you want to just kind of flip through with me again, it's to my mind, a cleanup. On page 2, I noticed that the penalty for failure to comply with public health law, and by the way, public health is really one of the oldest functions of government, started with the Romans, but we enacted this one in 1947, at $100, and you know, $100 in 1947 would be over $1,000 now, so I split the difference and called it $500. And there was there's a repealer at the end, which is on page 8, line 11. There was really a duplicative penalty section that was enacted before 1931, and so I just repealed that. The bottom of page 2, turning the page to page 3, there we have granted district attorneys and the department a way to enforce these things, but it wasn't really readily noticed, and I just wanted to clear up that the enforcement provision applied throughout. Bottom of page 3 and turning to 4, again, if you for some reason falsify birth certificates, death certificates, whatever, again, it was $100, another really old one, so I raised that to $500. Top of page 5, we had stated that every physician has to take a syphilis test. So, of course, nowadays we have advanced practice nurses as well, so I put that in. The bottom of page 5, and turning to page 6, this section was enacted in 2009 in response to the Federal National Organ Transplant Act of 1984 and has to really just integrates federal law into statute, but it didn't do so completely. So I really just, I think, cleaned it up instead of calling selling parts, which is a little bit vague, integrated more of the federal language, which does, the federal language existing includes fetal material, but that wasn't clear. I will just point out that we have a separate paragraph in statute dealing with aborted fetuses, and that had been my repealer because I had rolled it in with this, but the committee took that out. So that will be, Mr. Chairman, I think I'll actually maybe pause right here and recognize there the Standing Committee amendment to keep the specificity to aborted children in the bill. So if that's what the committee of the whole would like to do, then Chairman Barlow has already moved that. So I would call for the question on that part now.
And this on the first question having been called on the on Amendment 1, House Bill 250. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
So thank you, Mr. I'm sorry, go ahead.
The amendment has been passed. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So then continuing on pages 6 and 7, right now we have in current statute any abortions carried out. There's a form, and the only thing is several years ago when I wanted to get some information on how well our family planning programs were succeeding and asked for this information, they told me that really nobody turned in the form. So I thought the best thing to do would be to put in a penalty. You can see that on page 7. Line 13, and I just used the same $500 as we used for everything else. The other thing that I did on lines 5 and 6 there on page 7 was to put in county and state, and I'll talk further to that later. Other than that, no other piece of information on the current form has been changed. Page 7, turning to page 8, just clarifying, and again, right now the state vital records or the state health department does keep this information. My goal here, and I didn't pass it out because we all have way too many pieces of paper in our box, but right now the vital records turns in what is really a very interesting health statistics report to the governor, and I'll just give you some samples of current information that they turn in. Teen resident births by county, resident babies born premature by mother's age, resident mothers who are first-time mothers, babies that were breastfed at discharge by mother's age, births that the primary source of payment was Medicaid by mother's age. So I thought that the information from this, and again, remember that the information in this form is cannot, the patient cannot be identified personally in any way. This is just the same type of high-level information as this. But to my mind, that's part of the public health information, and to be able to know numbers of abortions in a county, let's say, would be useful. I mean, if they went up or went down, you might inquire whether the family planning program has changed, a lot of other things. So I just view it as a piece of epidemiological information that is useful in planning our public health programs. And so, Mr. Chairman, that is the end of the bill, and I'll be glad to stand for any questions.
Is there any other discussion on the bill?
Question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Representative or Chairman Barlow's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with the recommendation that Bill Number 250 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? House Bill 250 is passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill up for our consideration is House Bill 182. Chairman Barlow. I'm sorry. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 182, introduced by Representative Gray. Abortion Ultrasound Information, an act relating to public health and safety. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 182, Abortion Ultrasound Information, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Barlow, Clem, Hallinan, Halverson, Lone, McGuire. Noes, Representatives Dayton, Garou, and Sweeney. Signed, Representative Barlow, Chairman.
Okay, you've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Barlow?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that within the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with the recommendation that House Bill 180 do pass. I further move the Standing Committee Amendment. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm just going to work in the Standing Committee Amendment quickly. I won't call for the question because I know that the good sponsor of the bill wants to speak to it. But on page 2, there is a provision on page lines 1 and 2, at least 24 hours prior. And that is stricken by all of line 2 through child on page 3. All of that is stricken by the Standing Committee Amendment. And then there's another strike in the Standing Committee Amendment, and this occurs on page 4. And it occurs after the word physician on line 6, and the strikeout is the rest of the language on 6, 7, and 8. So it would limit it to a employee or agent of the physician, period. So, Mr. Chairman, that is a standing committee and the bill, and I'll turn over the discussion to the Representative Gray. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gray.
Mr. Chairman, I want to correct the record. It was House Bill 182. I apologize if I misstated it in the motion.
Representative Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 182 provides that with some exceptions, a physician, referring physician, or qualified person assisting the physician shall inform pregnant woman orally and in person that she has the right to view an active ultrasound image of the unborn child and hear the heartbeat of the unborn child if the heartbeat is audible. The bill contains exclusions. Actions undertaken to save the life or preserve the health of the unborn child, remove a dead unborn child, or remove an ectopic pregnancy are excluded actions. Medical emergencies are excluded. Medical emergency is defined in the bill to mean a pregnant woman's condition, which on the basis of a physician's good faith, clinical judgment, complicates her medical condition that the immediate termination of her pregnancy is necessary to prevent her death or creates a serious risk of causing her substantial and irreversible impairment of a major bodily function. Laws like this one that require that a woman be provided with information about the availability of ultrasound are clearly consistent within the U.S. Supreme Court's decisions on informed consent laws in 23 states have enacted provisions of varying degrees. House Bill 182 helps to ensure that a woman's decision is well informed. We have full information in so many decisions we make in our daily lives, and we have many laws about this. On top of that, routine medical procedures, where we're told the complications and effects of those procedures, but somehow on abortion, this pivotal decision, the opportunity for full information is not provided. The decision to see the unborn child and hear the child's heartbeat rests entirely with the mother. It is simply an option. It is not designed to force a woman to see something she does not want to see. The woman remains completely independent in her decision. House Bill 182 provides an opportunity, not a requirement. Addressing one of the concerns I've heard about the bill, that this impedes with the doctor-patient relationship, I'd say in procedure after procedure, the risks associated with that procedure are provided. Supporters of this bill simply want the opportunity for a woman to be provided, the opportunity to view an ultrasound and hear the heartbeat of the unborn child. I ask the Committee of the Whole to support House Bill 182. I would also urge Committee of the Whole to oppose the Standing Committee Amendment. We're just wanting to ensure that full information is provided, and that language in the bill helps to ensure that full information is provided. So I would oppose the Standing Committee Amendment, and I urge you to support the bill. Thank you.
We're on the Standing Committee Amendment. Minority Whip. Representative Hallahan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The committee heard a lot of testimony about this 24-hour issue. And the opinion of, I would say, a substantial group of those people thought that the 24-hour issue was unfair to people who had come from a long distance to have the abortion that they were going to have. And for that reason, we put that in there, that they would not be required to have that done within 24 hours of the procedure. The majority of people who are going to have a procedure such as this done would have seen the physician probably a few days before, and that would have been the time enough for them to have the ultrasound made available to them, and they could sign the release indicating that it had been offered to them. Therefore, I would urge that the committee support the First Amendment to the bill. The second part of the issue was on the item on page 3, where it says a qualified person means an agent or employee of the physician and who is a licensed psychologist, clinical social worker, professional counselor, registered nurse, or physician. In my opinion, as a physician, I know that in many offices, they don't have all of these people available to give the counseling that is required here. And therefore, I thought that the physician would be the person who would best be able to decide who was a qualified person to give that information to the patient. And for that reason, I urge that we support the House Amendment number 1. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Representative Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to say the bill is still good. I do want to clarify one thing from that from the previous speaker. I was taking tally of the testimony. We had about 80 people talk. It was about 2-1 in favor of these bills, a little under 2-1. So I want to make sure that we're clear on that. Thank you.
Minority Whip Pelkey.
Thank you.
you know, I feel a little odd about talking about this topic. Wyoming, this house was once home to a tall, skinny, lanky Republican from another part of the state other than the one we have now. And he once said, you know, I feel embarrassed that men shouldn't even be weighing in on this issue. But unfortunately, we are. And I just want to point out that the good citizens of Wyoming in 2012 approved an amendment to the Wyoming Constitution, that Article 1, Section 38, the right to health care access, which says that each competent adult shall have the right to make his or her own health care decisions, and that the state of Wyoming shall act to preserve these rights from undue government infringement. This bill brings the legislature, brings state government into the examination room during a time when a woman is faced with one of the most difficult and trying personal decisions probably of her life. I don't think legislature has any business getting involved in that. I think it's a decision and a discussion that should take place between a woman and her health care provider on and against this bill.
Representative Lone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for this bill, as the previous speaker said, that there is law in place to say that we're supposed to provide all that information. This bill just supports that. It just says, you know, we shall give a woman who goes to get one of these procedures done all the information she can possibly have. So this doesn't oppose what we have in law already. This just further supports it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to 182 and ask for its favorable introduction. This was just another attempt, not on or against the bill necessarily, but I do think it was just quirky is my new favorite word on these things. On page 1, when you look at the catch title, that it's to provide patients with information, but instead of using patients throughout the bill, we use pregnant women, and I thought it was more appropriate when you look at this act. It is on public health and safety here in 35-6. And so my standing committee amendment just changes the word pregnant woman to patient throughout the act. And I would be happy to answer any questions, but I thought that was more appropriate to the current wording in the statute to include that language instead of pregnant woman.
Question being called. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Representative Byrd.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman. We're on the Committee of the Whole Amendment.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, you referred, when you had said adopted, you referred to the Standing Committee Amendment and not the Committee of the Whole Amendment.
I'm sorry. Thank you. Majority Whip Summers. Okay. The Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Question? Questions being called. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
I guess I'm not sure. Okay. Division's being called. All those in favor of House Bill 182, please stand. Opposed? Please stand.
House Bill 182 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Our next bill up for consideration is House Bill 200. Reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 200, introduced by Representative Hunt. Beef Checkoff Penalty Repeal, an act relating to the Beef Council. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 5, Agriculture, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 200, Beef Checkoff Penalty Repeal, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Blake, Gray, Hunt, Larson, McKim, Steinmetz. Noes, Representatives Claussen, Haley, and Henderson. Signed, Representative McKim, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman McKim?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Bill number 200 do pass. And I turn the explanation of that bill over to my good Vice Chairman from Agriculture.
Vice Chairman Hunt.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, if you've got the bill out in front of you, you can see this is a pretty short and sweet piece of legislation, all of one page. What this does, in a nutshell, is we are repealing a penalty. And so let me give you just a brief bit of background and a little bit of understanding. For those of you who may not be familiar with what the checkoff program is and how it works, since the 1980s, there has been at a federal level a mandatory $1 per head checkoff that goes to a beef council. And that's true of many different agricultural commodities, whether it be pork, whether it be poultry, various nuts and fruits and vegetables. But anyhow, it is indeed a mandatory $1 per head fee. And this fee is collected any time animals are sold. So when cattle are run through the sale barn, when you get your check back as the producer, as the seller, you've got a little notation on there that says that the council has collected a certain amount of money off that, however many head that they've sold. And so that money, it goes to promote beef to the public, research into the nutritional benefits of beef, so on and so forth. But I believe there's a growing number of producers who have issue with the checkoff program and the fact that it is mandated. And at the state level, we have a state-level checkoff program that was actually started a few years before the federal one. And so it comes along with it, this $750 penalty. Now, at the federal level, there is a $7,500 penalty per offense. In other words, per animal. Not just if you've sold 500 cattle in one fell swoop, this isn't a $7,500 fine. This is $7,500 times 500. You can do the math. I haven't done that yet. But anyhow, Mr. Chair and members of the House, what this aims to do is repeal a redundant penalty. And so this is not making the mandatory checkoff toothless. This is simply repealing a redundant penalty that I don't feel is needed. And so with that, that's sort of the gist of it. I would stand for any questions. Thank you. And if none, then I would call for the question.
Chairman's monitor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I always have questions. So two of them on this one. Am I correct in assuming you'd be charged the $750 fine under Wyoming and the $7,500 fine at the national level concurrently? Is my first question, times however many. And then my second question is, how many times in the past 15, 20 years has the state actually gone after, or the Beef Checkoff Program gone after and charged somebody the actual $750 in the statute?
Vice Chairman Hunt.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for the question, Mr. Corporation Chair. Presumably, yes. In theory, yes, they would both be concurrent penalties because effectively there are two levels that are enforcing this. And so, and then for the second question, which is what? I forget. My apologies. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, the question is, have we ever collected this $750 penalty? Have we ever actually fined a Wyomingite for failure under the section?
Thank you, Representative Zwanitzer. Vice Chairman Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Corporation Chair, to answer your question, I don't know for certain, but I have certainly not heard of it. And so I guess, but that does raise another issue. Whether folks agree with the checkoff or not, everyone is a law-abiding citizen. And, nobody has any intention of breaking this. And so that you have an additional penalty for that you're holding over the heads of folks. And so I guess there you have it.
Is there any more discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman McKim's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with the recommendation that Bill number 200 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? House Bill 200 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 116. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 116, introduced by Representative Steinmetz, Abortion Amendments, an act relating to abortions. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 116, Abortion Amendments, respectfully reports, same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass, with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Barlow, Clem, Hallinan, Halverson, Lone, McGuire. Noes, Representatives Dayton, Garue, and Sweeney. Signed, Representative Barlow, Chairman.
Okay, you've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Barlow?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Committee of the Whole rises to report. It does so with the recommendation that House Bill 116 do pass, and I further move the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, and I turn the explanation of the bill over to Representative Steinmetz. And the Standing Committee Amendment over to Representative Steinmetz.
Representative Steinmetz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Today I bring you a little short 3-page bill on viability and fetal pain and the transfer of aborted children's parts and cells. And so this is an interesting issue for our state to take up. I just wanted to explain the bill to you. All we're doing is going in an existing language on page 2 and adding fetal pain to the definition of viability. And then we're going in further down that section, starting in line 14 on page 2, we're just saying that any tissue or cells from an aborted child be added to our current statute. So basically, if you sell, transfer, distribute, or give away an aborted child or any tissue or cells from an aborted child for any form of experimentation, is guilty of a felony punishable by a fine of not less than $10,000 and by imprisonment in the penitentiary for not less than 1 year or more than 14 years. And that is current language. We're just simply adding a pre-viable baby to that. Then the Standing Committee Amendment, what we do is we go in on page 1, line 4, and after experimentation, we insert providing for applicability. On page 2, line 11, after experimentation, we insert a semicolon and exemptions. On page 2, line 13, we begin adding verbiage except as provided in this subsection of this section. And what we're doing is we're exempting a few things out. So on page 3, after line 4, B, subsection A of this section shall not be construed to apply to Romanet I, any legal organ or tissue donations made by a parent, Romanet 2, a child or any tissue or cells from a child delivered by a miscarriage or any other medical condition which is not an abortion. So I think the bill is pretty straightforward and clear, and I would stand for any questions.
Representative or Chairman Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I do have a question on the Standing Committee Amendment, and for the body's edification, this was provided by the bill sponsor during the committee testimony, and the committee did agree to it. My question is, how does this apply to diagnostic testing that may be in the interest of the mother and the father of a child who is aborted by whatever means? Does this language, the new language in the Standing Committee Amendment, allow that? Not donations, but actual diagnostic testing of tissue. That's what I want to be clear about. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Steinmetz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe that it would, because I'll just read you the definition of an abortion. Abortion means an act, procedure, device, prescription administered to or prescribed for a pregnant woman by any person with knowledge of the pregnancy, including the pregnant woman herself, with the intent of producing the premature expulsion, removal, or termination of a human embryo or fetus, except that in cases in which the viability of the embryo or fetus is threatened by continuation of the pregnancy, early delivery after viability by commonly accepted obstetrical practices shall not be construed as an abortion. So I think it's covered in that definition.
Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
I guess opposed. Okay. The Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Chairman Barlow.
Mr. Chairman, I would move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to House Bill 116 and ask for your favorable consideration. Ladies and gentlemen, the good representative that sponsored this bill was very clear about what this bill does, and when she stated that we are backing up the viability definition, maybe not quite the word she said. So what Committee of the Whole Amendment does is it strikes the top of page 2. There's some other conforming language from page 1, obviously, but it strikes the top of page 2, lines 1 through 8. And ladies and gentlemen, this is a significant departure. I have no qualms about the second half of this bill. I think that all of us have reservations. I will point out that the previous bill we adopted, now there's going to be some dissimilarity between the two. But this part of the bill, this committee of the whole amendment, I think this is something that this body should be very cautious about, and therefore I bring the amendment to strike this. Clearly, long-established statute about live natural or life-supported systems outside the womb, that's viability. And now we're going to add a term, feel pain. And I would just add, request that we all think pretty hard about what feeling pain is, and then how what the literature is and what the medical opinion is, because when we did take testimony, I think there was testimony irrespective of the whether propensity of the testimony was for or against the bills, there was a variety of definition on what feeling pain was as far as a gestational age or a developmental age. So this is a part that I think has both legal, medical, and quite honestly is going farther probably than this body is ready to go within the context of this bill. So I would ask for your favorable consideration, stand for any questions.
Representative Steinmetz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a little pushback on that. Just to let you know, in utero surgery has been performed for many years, and the administration of fetal pain anesthesia has been the standard practice since the inception of fetal surgery more than 25 years ago and is practiced worldwide. So there is scientific proof and medical and science to back this judgment up, but I would refer you to the bill on page 2, lines 7 and 8, and we are subjecting this to according to appropriate medical judgment. So just to push back a little bit there.
Representative Hallahan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I speak in favor of this amendment. I think that this bill provides that the fetus and the aborted child, that tissue is going to be protected by this bill. And that's the meat of the bill. I think the part about viability of feeling pain, I think, is a controversial area that is unnecessary to this bill. And I would think that it probably detracts from the support for the bill that would be present on a statewide basis. Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for this bill, on and for this amendment. And here's why. I'd ask you to do us go to your search engine and look up fetal pain when they start feeling pain. And it ranges. It really does. Now, I understand where the good bringer of the bill is speaking, that it's actually got to be determined by a physician. But there's the deal. It's anywhere from 18 to 36 weeks on when fetal pain can be felt. So with that broad spectrum, and it's not a sound science to say fetal pain. I want this bill to go through, but I can't support it unless we pull that out. So on and for the amendment, let's be very concise about what we're saying. Thank you.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against the amendment and for the bill, again, we're talking about an abortion on a child who can feel pain. And typically, and not to get grotesque, but these children are typically, their spinal cords are severed in the back of their neck, and they're ripped apart limb by limb until they're taken out of the woman's body. And I think it's pretty clear. You can find YouTube videos. You can see where inside of a woman's womb, young children inside of the womb who recoil due to infringement of an object or something. You can definitely tell that they feel pain. Furthermore, science has seen. You can tell. You can measure pain by enzymes that the body gives off. And those enzymes are measurable. So there's actual science to back this up. And so I would urge you to vote against the amendment and for the bill. Thank you.
Representative Jennings.
On and against the amendment because, you know, I think that there is science. But, you know, science doesn't always get it right. And so I see this as a question of if you're going to err on the right side of this. For the bill, against the amendment.
Is there any other discussion? Okay, we are on the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye. Opposed?
No.
Okay. Yes, the chair's in doubt. So all those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. The amendment has been adopted. Now, question has been raised. Which bill? All those in favor of House Bill 116, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Okay, the chair isn't sure. Those that are in favor of the bill, please stand. All those opposed, stand. House Bill 116 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Our next bill for consideration is House Bill 60. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 60, introduced by Capital Financing, State Investment Policy, an act relating to public funds. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 60, State Investment Policy, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, and Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Nicholas?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it, do so with a recommendation of due pass of House Bill 60, and there is a standing committee amendment, so I will turn over the standing committee amendment to the good representative from this county, and then we'll turn it over to the bringer of the bill.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move standing committee amendment number 1 to House Bill 60 and ask for your favorable consideration. What we're really doing here is just some conforming language with another bill that we will be considering on the same issue. We realized in committee that we are working on the same paragraph and decided it would obviously be advantageous to change the paragraph the same way both times. So that's what we're doing essentially on page 2. And just the thing that might catch people's interest the most is on line 8 of page 2. Right now it says not more than 55% shall be invested in common stocks. Now you will notice in the amendment that we have changed that to 70, but it's that, and that sounds kind of radical, but it actually is not, because you'll notice there that it had kind of antiquated or overly specific language about common stocks. And if you know anything about investments, you know there's also preferred stock and various other things. And so we inquired with the office of the folks that manage these funds, and the 70% actually reflects current practice of all the categories of these kind of stocks. And so that's really just a cleanup to, in conformance with what we do now and to match another bill. So if there are no questions, I would move this amendment.
Question? Is there any other discussion on the amendment? Question being called. All those in favor of the standing amendment number one, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed. Standing amendment number one has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Speaker Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, the House Bill 60 is brought to you by your Capital Finance and Investment Committee, and the members of the House are all still back here on the previous 63rd Legislative Committee, and that's represented from House Bill 44, or House District 44 here in the Capital City. The chairman of Committee Number 1 is back, and the chairman of Committee Number 3 from Johnson County, as well as the vice chair of Education, as well as the gentlelady here from Cheyenne who just moved the standing committee amendment. So all of us are back, and this was one of our interim pieces of work. And then we run this bill through joint appropriations. And so you can see it's sponsored by Select Committee on Capital Finance and Investing. And really, as the good lady from Capital City pointed out, it's really a cleanup. And I want to just take you through some new language quickly. On page 2, the old language of the 55%, and it's changed with the standing committee amendment, but the rest of that language is updated, and the committee worked on it a couple times this summer to really reflect modern investment language. And then when you move over to page 3, members, that this language, including the new paragraph 2 on line 5, now moves, and we have this 70% cap that the committee number 2 put in there, which I think our state elected official who, as we all think, that is in charge of these, but representing the SLIB board, was fine with that 70%, but really it's about this modern investment of evaluation of risk. So on line 5, it talks about the prudent these evaluation of risk instruments be used, and you can read it, the capital market theory, which generally accepted, followed institutional investors on these long-term investors. And then it talks about consideration of the following, line 11, through mitigated through diversification, and line 15, long-term investing. So members, then you flip over to page 4. It talks about the metrics. It'll use two risk mitigation metrics on line 2. Those two metrics are spelled out on line 6. One metric shall specify the maximum percentage for any state fund investment securities. And line 12, one metric will measure the risk of the state fund and of the investment. Then duties of the board at the bottom of page 4 and moving over to page 5. It talks about A is the annual released annually the reasonableness and comprehensiveness and investment policy statements. They'll report to the legislature. These are duties of the board. They report to your Capital Finance Committee. And then the paragraph you can't see in there is paragraph B, and that's existing language that there's a quarterly investment report. You can go online to the elected official, the trader. I guess I can say that. Maybe I can't. His website and see quarterly investment reports, and then see at least annually, and this is new, when conditions warrant a change or reallocation. And so really it's just an updating of our investment policy and the reporting with that, and I'd stand for any questions.
Okay, question being called. All those in favor of Representative or Chairman Nicholas's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it does so with the recommendation that bill number 60 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay, House Bill 60 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for consideration is House Bill 197. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 197, introduced by Representative Olson. Marijuana and THC Products Policy Reform Act, an act relating to controlled substances. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 197, Marijuana and THC Products Policy Reform Act, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Biteman, Jennings, Kirkbride, Olson, Pelkey, Ponell, Salazar and Winters. No, Representative Baker. Signed, Representatives Winter. Vice Chairman.
You heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Kirkbride.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 197 do pass. And I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment, which the Standing Committee Amendment, for all practical purposes, just added the one word, or container. When the weight of these materials are being considered, we're not going to include the weight of the container.
Is there any discussion on the amendment? Question being called on the amendment. Are you all those in favor? Say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The Standing Committee Amendment number one has been adopted. We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And for presentation of the bill, we turn it back to the sponsor from House District 11.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now, after having gone through an entire pot day in the judiciary yesterday, I'm going to start this conversation the same way almost every pot bill in judiciary starts, and it's keep an open mind, folks, as we go through this bill. And I really do want you to, because you've, you know, what we're wrestling with right now is twofold. And one of it deals with one of the things you're going to wrestle with today is pot products, and that's not new to this legislature, and it wasn't new to the Judiciary Committee. The committee has spent several years on it, but you know, this committee, I think, has brought together, I think the best way to describe this bill is a compromise, and so it's a compromise built off of every other bill that the Judiciary Committee has dealt with over the years, and incorporating, I think, in my mind, various positions from all ends of the spectrum. So what I hope you'll get from this bill is, whether you're a decrim person, a legalization person, or a criminalization person, it doesn't matter. I think that all ends of the spectrum get a lot out of this bill. So first, let me walk you through what the bill does section by section, and then I just want to add some brief comments, and I'm not going to take a whole lot of your time because it isn't a new concept to you on marijuana reform. Number one, on page 3, as you begin to look at section 35-7-1031, I want you to know that that's the existing law. So when you see the criminal punishments existing for everything over 3 ounces, that's not a change that this bill is making. That's your existing law. What we are actually addressing is possession of marijuana in plant form, 3 ounces or less, and product possession, THC product possession, 8 ounces or less. Now, first, let me walk you through what the current law says. Okay, in Wyoming, if you possess 3 ounces or less of a plant form of marijuana, your first possession could be punishable up to a $1,000 fine or 1 year in prison. First possession, 3 ounces or less. This bill, just in comparison, I'll walk you through, this is called a stair-step approach, but on page 4, we have lowered the first offense to 20 days or a $200 fine. First offense. Now, I want you to keep that in mind. There is a reform to your current marijuana policy, and that's where I said, look, if you're a decrim individual, this actually should be pretty appealing to you. Right now, $1,000 fine, 1 year in prison, for possession of 3 ounces or less of plant form marijuana, we've brought it down to 20 days. The approach that we're using is very similar to what we do in our DUI laws. Now, we have included pot products, or THC products, more correctly stated, in that same category, 8 ounces or less. Now, what's the current law on THC products, you might ask? Well, that's a darn good question. And some of you may think, or may have heard, well, it's de facto decriminalized in the state. That's only one interpretation. That's not actually true. Courts are mixed on how they treat this. We call it the gap in the law because we're not real sure. Courts are across the board. There are some courts who throw out a THC product. And does everyone maybe understand what we're talking about with THC products? You can look at the last page here and there's a definition. But we are talking about any type of product, whether consumable or not, that contains THC. That may be on the consumable end, a brownie or a gummy bear. And on the other end, it may be a lotion. Courts are kind of mixed on this. Some will throw it out. Why? Because under your current schedules in your statute, marijuana is defined by its form, plant. And that's because when folks sat in your seats many, many, many years ago and they developed that statute, they could not fathom marijuana in the form of a golden little gummy bear. At that point, all they knew about was in a plant form. And so the statute didn't contemplate it. It contemplated a single form in plant. And so there are judges currently who say, you know what, if this is not, if this THC product comes before me, it's in your possession, say it's a Coca-Cola that it's concentrated with THC, or it's a gummy bear with THC, or it's the lotion with THC. The judge may say it's not in plant form. We can't prosecute them under the statute. Other judges, however, don't take that strict literal interpretation. And so what does that mean? It means two different things. You could have an 8 ounce of Coke with THC in the console of your car. You could get pulled over and you could get absolutely nothing. But it also means that a judge could sentence you to 1 year in prison. Now, that's the appealing part of this bill. Again, if you're not necessarily sure you want to take the leap for criminalization of a THC product, know that actually you can serve a year in prison for that 8 ounce Coke. But under this bill, we would be setting a very clear standard across the board. No, there's no way to interpret that a different way. You'd serve 20 days and a $200 fine for a first offense. So we close that gap. So know that the gap, the THC product gap, doesn't just mean that products are de facto decriminalized. No, no, no. It can go both ways, and it does. So let me walk you through what happens after the first conviction. So we take a stair-step approach. The second conviction of a 3 ounce or less of pot product or 8 ounces or less of a THC product is going to get you 6 months maximum or $750 fine. Again, that's still virtually half of the current law. So I hope that you can see the trend. What is part of the purpose of this bill? Part of the purpose is to address the overcrowding issue we have in our prisons. Part of the idea here is not to send someone to prison for 1 year with an 8 ounce Coke or a 3 ounce plant form, so a single joint. The idea is we're imprisoning these individuals. We're overcrowding our prison. We all know the burden that has placed on our correction system. And so this bill is attempting to address that as well. Third conviction. So now we've gotten to a third offense that you have been stopped with this product, whether it be our current marijuana or the THC product, our plant leaf. We get a third offense, and now what we've done is, this one I want you to key into because it's on the top of page 5. And we're creating a special type of misdemeanor. This is an elevated misdemeanor. In Wyoming, general provisions of law under, I can't remember what the exact statute is, 6-whatever it is. It defines a felony and a misdemeanor as being separated by the term of imprisonment. If it's a 1 year term of imprisonment, you're separated. If it's a 1 year term of imprisonment, you're separated between a felony and a misdemeanor. So in this bill, we say that on your third offense, we're still not going to give you a felony. We're going to give you 2 years in county or a $5,000 fine. Now compare that to the current law. Under the current law, your third offense of a possession of 3 ounces or less is a felony. So we've scaled that back. We're not going to felonize individuals the way we have been. Fourth offense. All right, now we're to a fourth offense. Now we finally tack the felony on. It's a 5-year felony or a $10,000 fine. So we've taken the existing offense in, that you would get a felony under, and we've moved it back. Now, okay, so four offenses before we get to a felony under existing law. It's three right now. But I want you to take one more thing into consideration. In all reality, it's not four offenses. It's six before you get to a felony. Why is that? Because under state law, we have the ability to give an individual a deferral on their first offense, and that's going to happen. In fact, if you talk to your prosecutors, you don't believe me, go home and talk to your local prosecutors. I doubt any one of them will tell you that they imprison a 17-year-old for possession of 3 ounces or less. It's just so rare. They use the mechanism of deferral, and judges use it as well. So we really, and then we have a second type of deferral that we can use. It's a felony deferral. So you really have the in all likelihood, the possibility that someone has to possess it six times before we have a felony. Okay, so in the hopes that I don't speak too much, you know, it's a comprehensive bill, and I want you to understand that it's not just closing the gap on pot products. We've decided to treat products and plant form no differently. And in doing that, I think we can accomplish some of the criminal justice reforms that we're all interested in. We're all interested in making those prisons less crowded and getting folks the treatment that they need. So why not just give them a civil penalty for the first offense? Well, honestly, if the idea is treatment, if you give someone a civil penalty for a first offense of a minor possession, they're not going to get treatment. It's going to be just like a traffic infraction. They just pay their fine, and they never even go into the courtroom. You get them into the courtroom, and the judge is able to evaluate these individuals. The prosecutor is able to spend time looking into this individual, and they can decide, okay, we're going to give you 20 days, or we're not, but here's the treatment path we want you to take. So if treatment is absolutely necessary, they're going to be in the position to have a prosecutor and a judge evaluate that for them. If it's not, and you're moving down your path for civil penalty, they're probably not going to get the treatment that they want. Okay. And with that, because the good chairman is patiently waiting to ask questions, I'll just go ahead and open myself up, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe this is a step in the right direction. Is anybody confused yet? It makes our statutes a little bit confusing. I think it makes it confusing to the public. I think it makes it confusing to us. But I will have a second reading amendment to maybe further discussion along. But for the sake of the body, I decided to wait and bring that in second reading so that we can get this moving. But it is a step in the right direction, but it could be better.
Chairman Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For a couple of years, I've worked diligently to help with expungement of misdemeanors. And we've recently passed what I considered pretty good legislation with that to help people get along with their lives. One of the questions I have, and maybe a suggestion on this bill, but our expungement statutes, I have 5 years. It's a 5-year look back. And I see we have the look back on this being 10 years. And so I think it'd be appropriate that we took that 10-year window and move it to 5, or we have to go in into our expungement statutes and exempt these misdemeanors out from that 5-year look back just to be consistent. So that's my comment.
Representative Olson.
Yeah. So, real quick, I do want to address that before we may get lost in the conversation. The good chairman brings up a very valid point, and I think that probably is addressable, but what I want you to compare this statutory scheme to is your DUI laws. The DUI law actually has a 10-year look-back period. I'm not sure how that functions with expungement. I may rely on the good chairman to help me understand that, but same exact scenario. It's a 10-year look-back period for a first offense, second offense, third offense on DUI. If you're curious, look at your DUI statutes, because this is actually modeled after that system. So it's not like we started from scratch, and maybe I don't know how that functions with expungement.
Minority Whip Pelkey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not happy with this bill. If I had my druthers, I think Representative Baker and I would probably work on a bill that would substantially change the penalties for possession of marijuana in a state that's just north of a state where that practice is quite common and quite legal. That said, I support this bill. It's a step in the right direction. It's an important step in the right direction. You look at current statute, I have people coming into my office on a regular basis who've been caught with a small amount of marijuana on their way back from the state to the south or crossing the country, suddenly find themselves facing the possibility of 1 year in jail and a $1,000 fine. That said, I've never seen it happen for a first offense, and I think that this bill moves closer to the reality than the current statute is. On another matter regarding the look-back provision, I, in fact, had a bill the last 2 years and this year as well that would have imposed a five-year look-back provision. Given the fact that existing statute has no look-back, you could be, I always like to say you could have been busted for a joint on your way to Woodstock in 1969, and they would still be looking at that offense here in 2017. You know, while you're 70 years old. The thing is we need a look-back provision of some sort. I withdrew my five-year look-back provision after this bill passed. I would prefer a five-year look-back provision, and I will talk to good chairman or the good country lawyer about that, and hopefully we can all work out something that'll work both with this bill and the existing statutes. But I stand in favor of this bill, reluctantly. It doesn't go as far as I'd like, but I get a feeling that when you look at the sponsors on that page, it goes a little further than some of them would like as well.
Chairman Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to follow up on my previous comments and say to the presenter of the bill is, you know, look at 713-1501, again, our expungement of misdemeanors, and it just says misdemeanors, but it accepts out the DUI look back specifically, and that was my point. We either need to change that statute and accept this out or take the look back to 5 years, and I'm comfortable either way. I just want to make sure we've got consistent, enforceable statutes that people can follow.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is an interesting bill. Does a lot of the things that I've been trying to get in front of this body for a long time. I just have a couple questions, and maybe we should think about this down the road, but when we start integrating those edible and the compounds, as in was stated earlier, the gummy bears, it's kind of interesting that those are sold by a specific weight, but what if one individual is found with one gummy bear? Is he then liable to be prosecuted on the weight of the gummy bear, the percentage in that one gummy bear? And little questions like that, partial percentages of an original purchased product, at what extent does the law kick in? And even if it's not their product, just lying around next to them. So I think I like this bill, but it still has a ways to go. So I'd like to see what you can do with amendments.
Chairman Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just pose a couple questions. First is, and I appreciate the effort, and you've seen my name on several bills that have been out there regarding this topic, and I appreciate this effort. I probably have as much recent experience with this in close quarters as anybody in this body. I want to know a little bit about the correlation between 3 ounces of plant form and 8 ounces of THC product. and how that correlation was, how that arose. And then when we talk about the tiered effect, I wonder when an addicted offender comes in here, because there is a some latitude for the court to address an addicted offender, and this doesn't do anything towards that, and I would just like some clarification of that. And then on page 5, line 2, it talks about in county jail. And I guess generally what we do when somebody is convicted and the court imposes an imprisonment, they're turned over to the custody of the corrections, that department that takes care of those folks, and they make a determination where that person is held. And it seems that this is more directed than we see generally in our criminal statutes, at least to my recollection. So those three things, the county jail, the addicted offender correlations, if there is any, and then the I guess the equivalence between 3 ounces of plant form and 8 ounces of THC product. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Winters.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Let me just tackle one of the questions, and then I'll turn it back over to the good prime sponsor of the bill. I appreciate the question that was just raised by the gentleman that was speaking, because right now we're looking at changing this to 8 ounces. This came through the committee as a compromise. We actually started off by putting this as at a pound, trying to get individuals of the then committee to come on board with the understanding that we need to close this hole. And so 8 ounces actually is an astonishingly large amount, because we're talking about concentrations, not dilutions. But the reason why we're making that statement is because when you look at the there is the potential that you could be sending someone to giving them a misdemeanor or a felony because of ingredients other than the THC within the product. But we were able to get it down to 8 ounces, but this was a compromise trying to help people understand that we have to close this particular hole. Now, I will say that in a committee meeting partway through the summer, we had an expert from the state to our south who was on the phone. And when we told her that we were looking at 1 pound, there was this audible gasp, because 1 pound of product is massive. 8 ounces of product is massive. It's enough to get an entire community college high. I mean, it went right now, when you're looking at the standard that was set to the state to our south, they're talking about 10 milligrams being enough to get an average adult high. But one gummy bear, and we received the testimony, the size of the tip of your pinky finger, was enough to get 30 adults high. It had 300 milligrams. That's the concentration. But I'm also telling you, that's how far we were willing to go, to settle at 8 ounces, trying to get some people on board, and sadly, we just couldn't do it. They voted it down. That's why you're seeing it as a bill that was brought in this form. So I'm just, I wanted to explain that, and hopefully I answered your question.
Is there any more discussion on the bill? Oh. Representative Parnell.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, in answer to the one question about the going to the county jail, where it's a misdemeanor, if the court orders an individual to the county jail for a certain period of time, the sheriff of that county that it's sent to will abide by that order. They don't have a choice in that. So if they're ordered to county jail, they will go to county jail for the period of time that's imposed. Thank you.
Is there any more discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Kirkbride's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that bill number 197 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? No. House Bill 197 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Are we ready? Our next bill is House Bill 225. Will the reading clerk read the bill?
House Bill 225, introduced by Representative Harshman. Select Committee on Education Funding, an act relating to education. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 225, Select Committee on Education Funding, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Bovee, Brown, Flitner, Freeman, Hunt, Kenner, Northrop, Paxton, Piperinen. Signed, Representative Northrop, Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this bill was then referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, and Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Northrop?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 225 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment and will explain it, because it's an easy one. Okay, on page 5, line 14, if you picked it up and looked at it, you'll see that we have substituted the word taxpayers at the very end of that sentence, because most people are taxpayers, and included instead business people. And therefore, I ask for the question on the amendment.
Question being called. All those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment number 1, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Okay, the Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Representative or Chairman Northrop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And here is the explanation of the bill as the Speaker of the House.
Oh. Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, House Bill 225, and you can see it's a wide variety of you members who have helped co-sponsor this, is that other horse in the race on a solution to our school funding crisis. And so the bill is pretty standard the way others. Kind of select committees have been set up. There's 14 members on the bottom page 1, and you can see the makeup, 7 in each legislative chamber. You can see the appointment procedures on page 3. That's pretty standard language. And then if you go to the line 18 and 19 on the bottom of page 3, it talks about the issues that the select committee will focus on. Number 1, potential reductions. Number flipping over, Romanette 2 on page 4, use of existing funds. Romanette 3, diversions of existing revenue streams and investment income. And Romanette 4 on line 6, options to increase revenues, including options that are time limited until the next recalibration. Line 11 also tasks the committee to study and recommend options for permanent funding solutions for the school capital construction and major maintenance, which is 100% dependent on minerals and is currently unfunded with the with coal lease bonuses going away. Members on page 4, paragraph E, talks about subcommittees can be formed out of this committee. Paragraph F on line 20 talks about who will kind of staff the committee from the State Finance Data Advisory Committee. Talks about on page 5, the governor will appoint 4 advisory groups to assist this committee, and the superintendent will appoint a member to each of those groups. The chairman of education has talked about the makeup of that group, so on line 14 and 15, representing all stakeholders. Talks about how they can receive per diem and mileage. It's pretty standard language. Over to page 6, talks about also the staffing on paragraph H of the LSO, the Department of Education and Revenue and State Facilities Construction Department and School Facilities Commission and the State Building Budget Division, I should say, of Department of A&I. Members, if you The Select Committee on Line 11 can introduce legislation. I think that's the difference. This is a legislative committee with other members who are advisors. If we included those folks as part of the Select Committee as voting members, this committee would not be able to sponsor legislation. And so you have those other stakeholders as advisory members. The Select Committee, I think on line 14 through 18, recommend to the governor and presiding officers of the House and Senate that the legislature convene a special session if they think that's necessary before the 2018 budget session to consider any legislation. And then paragraph K talks about expert opinions that can be sought out and contracted for on page 7, that the committee shall meet not less than 7 times. And if you read on line 9, try to meet in at least each of the 7 appointment districts of the state. The report is due. The work should be completed by September 1st. And the committee will exist until the end of the 64th legislature. Section 2 are the appropriations, $109,000 from the general fund to the LSO. Paragraph B is $46,000 from the general fund to the governor's office. And Section 3 on page 9 is the effective date is effective immediately. The thought is that perhaps this is even signed into law. If other horses in this solution race stumble and break a leg and don't make the finish line, that we could even begin some of the meetings before we leave town to save money, frankly. So, members, I'd stand for any questions.
Is there any discussion on the bill? Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a question, and appreciate the work here, and I believe this is the bill that's referred to as the super committee bill. And the question that I have really is my understanding is this is really kind of the fallback, if you will. So if we the education committee has been working real hard trying to produce a good bill out of that committee to address some of the stuff that we've been looking at right now. And should that bill actually go through, I guess what I'm trying to figure out is if this bill really is going to be needed. Because I view this as a fallback, not the primary. So if the good speaker could speak to that. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the representative from Campbell County is correct, and that's and I haven't read the substitute bill. I think that our committee number 4 is going to continue working on tonight. I haven't read it. The only thing I know is what I read in the paper, frankly, and I think that still has a study in it as well. And so this is a fallback. We'd hope that will come then to the committee of the whole, where, as I mentioned to you, that we, the 60th, will be the super committee, and have input from our. The people we represent, the 9,000-10,000 folks back home that we represent, there's been so many comments already. 600 initially on the white papers. Over, I don't know if it's over 200 or 300 now on this other horse in the race, this other House bill out there. And then I wrote down comments from 44 speakers the other night at the high school across the street. So there's a lot of people becoming engaged in this. But if somehow those bills falter, I think the representative from Campbell County is right. I think there has to be some kind of mechanism where we get out and get the people involved in this. And so that's the intent of it.
Representative Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just want to rise to express my concerns about this. I think that, in my view, this is going to lead to a proposal for more taxes. We've already seen that this proposal we're going to get here, potentially the substitute bill, is going to have a huge tax increase in it. I think that we really need to focus on how, at the Education Foundation program account, and how do we control the growth of this account. And one of the ways is education savings accounts. And I don't think we've had enough of a conversation about those. Yes, the bills are going through committee, but there's huge savings there, huge savings, huge. And yes, I guess it could be part of the conversation here, but I really think that we should be striking the revenue part and focusing on school choice and ways that we can deliver the same product but control the education program account at the same time. The other thing I would say is $109,000 for this I think is a lot of money. And the other thing I would say is on the school capital construction account, I've talked a little bit about this, but you know, it says in there that we're going to come up with new funding sources, but how about the actual way the account works and the fact that we're not block granting those funds, which leads to this incentive where the state is paying for this, but we don't have any control about on what's happening on the ground, which is one of the reasons why the costs have skyrocketed in that account. So for those reasons, I think we need to go back to the drawing board and really, really have some conversations about school choice, empowering parents. And thank you very much.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Are you ready for question? Oh, okay. Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Northrup's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill 225 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The bill, House Bill 225 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for consideration is House Bill 262. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 262, introduced by Representative Harshman, Penitentiary Savings Fund. An act relating to the Wyoming State Penitentiary. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 262, Penitentiary Savings Fund, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, and Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman.
Chairman Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it do so with a recommendation of do pass for House Bill number, what number is it? 262. For an explanation of the bill, I turn that over to the good representative from the middle lower part of the state.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Haven't spoken at this mic yet. Had some nice snacks back here. Thought I would try this one out by my friend from Green River. Friends. My friends from Green River and all my friends in the House. Members, I bring you this bill with really just an attempt to get moving on this issue. And I think this was a big issue. It still is a big issue. We had a select committee study this, came back with options, and I'm not sure that, you know, our committee number 2 that generally starts these conversations and will find budget ways for them, or I'm not sure the select committee was ready to say, yeah, we want to do option 1 or 1A or option 3 or any of those options, and I think we want to continue to kind of, there's some money being used to fix this existing facility, and then there was talk of bonding, you know, and I read the report from the territorial legislature here earlier this week, and the territorial governor was talking about how we'd bonded for the Capitol, and we'd bonded for schools and the insane asylum and the school for the deaf and dumb and the prison in the territory, and talked about the state of Wyoming and how it was getting criticized because it was only for agriculture. And it was an interesting read. But anyway, back to this bill. I just bring this bill kind of similar to what we've done in the last several years as we start saving for projects. And we've done that with our health facilities, that we've saved the money and put it away. We did that with our capital building. We started a savings account. And I thought the mechanism here was to start saving. I guess the thing that you don't realize is that 4 or 5 years goes by pretty quick. And so what this bill does, members, is starting in the next budget, not the 17-18 budget, but the 19-20 budget, that we would just set aside inside the SIPA account about half of those funds. And that's about $42 million projected in 19. That'll grow to about $43 or $44 million in 20. And then about, you know, maybe $46-47 million in 21 and 22. But there'll be a lot of legislators that'll look at that. It's just a way to start say, hey, we're actually kind of planning for this. And but there'll be a future legislature, either the 66th or 67th, will probably make the decision on what do our prisons look like. Is it going to stay where our Constitution says it's going to stay? Is it all going to stay there? Is some of it going to go to the eastern part of the state where we have a shelled-in facility? So all those things, I think, are for future legislators. But I thought at least we'd start doing what some of our predecessors did, is start saving for it. And it's a mechanism to do that. And 2 years from now, if you want to say, hey, we don't want to save anymore, we want to pull that out and put it somewhere else, well, 31 votes, 31 of you will decide that. And but it's a way to kind of start moving in that direction to at least plan. So that's the spirit I bring this. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To echo what the good speaker has said, this is a start on saving the money because we have to start now. The prison, whatever we decide to do, whether it's to rebuild what's there, build a new one, a combination maybe of those, it will cost a lot of money. Prisons are not inexpensive. And we hesitate mentioning any funds, any dollar figures, because what happens is you mention a dollar figure and it gets ingrained and people stick with that and say, well, gee, you said it was this number. Why is it $10 million over that? Let's just round them off and say $100 million and up is what this will cost. Prisons are very expensive just by their nature. So this starts the process. We decided not to get involved in all of the detailed engineering studies and that. If you want to see those, I have 2 volumes of them in my office. You're welcome to review all of them. There are a number of people in the room who are on that task force to look at those. And so this gets the project started. Even if we were to say right now today this is what we're going to do, it's 2 years out before we could do any real work once you do the design, engineering studies, bid for it, and all of that. So that's what it is. It's a start, and we'll move on. You'll hear more about this as we go. One thing, I don't think the current penitentiary is in a situation where it's going to collapse around the staff and the inmates in the next year or so. It will need some work. We've planned for that work. There's money already allocated to that. So ask your support on this to start planning for the future and get on with things.
Representative Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think one of the lessons from the capital renovation, you know, that account built up over about a decade, I believe. I think the final disbursement was about in 2014, and I think they started saving on that in the early 2000s, is that these accounts really need to have some provisions in there about how much is going to be spent without competitive bidding and how much is going to be spent with competitive bidding, because the use of bid waivers on this capital project is deeply concerning to me, to my constituents, and I think there's just a general concern about it in the state. And I think we need to have some provisions when we start setting aside funds to say that only a certain percentage is going to be spent without, that we're going to have a certain amount that's going to be spent with competitive bidding, and the amount needs to be very, very high. And maybe you have some emergencies once in a while, but those emergencies...
Point of order, Mr. Chairman. We're talking about a bill set aside an account for the penitentiary. We're not talking about bid waivers. We're not talking about the capital. I'd like to stay on topic.
Representative Green.
I think when we set up accounts, we need to have controls in place. Thank you.
Representative Jennings.
Just a question for the bringers of the bill. When testimony that we've heard in the past was that to replace this might be $85 or $100 million, but we're trying to put a balance of $250 million away. Can you explain to me why we're wanting to go that much?
Chairman Nicholas.
Sure, and I can help answer that question. First of all, that happens over several number of years, and so we'll get there as it gets there. But the preliminary study for the replacement and fixing the current penitentiary, there was a study done on it, and I believe it's available on the website. It's numerous other places, but it's roughly $86 million to do just repairs but no upgrades to the current penitentiary. Then if you do upgrades, in other words, make various components of it so that it's you're getting back to a 20- or 30-year life cycle for the entire thing, the testimony was roughly $120 to $130 million. To build it, and as you may recall, this penitentiary is in a location where this is the second time a building has failed there, and we had to rebuild one already. So one of the other options is to rebuild an entire penitentiary. The estimated cost on that right now, if you include infrastructure, roads, and everything to get there, are between $380 and $450 million to do it. And that's just how much these things cost. And that's a unit with has a equivalent in size, so 700 beds, of high security and medium security.
Representative Witters.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I'm not opposed to the bill. I just want to make sure I understand exactly what we're doing. I know that it looks like we're creating a CAPCON account within the SIPA account. So essentially, it sounds like we're creating a coffee can within a coffee can, which I'm not opposed to. I'm just asking the question, do we really need to do that? Or since it's already in that strategic account within the SIPA, why do we necessarily need to earmark it in this particular way? It's not a problem, I don't think. I just want to know why the process there.
Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Going to wait for the good speaker to walk far enough past me. He can't. I really want to like this bill, but let me tell you what nobody's told you quite yet. What you're basically doing here is binding a future legislature 2.5 years from now to start saving in a project. And I'm going to be professional here. The way these things work is we pass them through now, and they're really, really tough to take out. And so in the budget process, we won't see until next week or so, we'll have money in SIPA, and we'll make decisions of the body, probably not on that account this year, but certainly in the budget process next year. But what you're basically doing is committing a future legislature in 2.5 years of something that's going to be really, really difficult to take out. And I understand the need and the desire and why we're trying to do it right now, because I've been here long enough to know how these things work now. And it's a great project. I just don't think you want to tie up the flexibility in future years, because we really don't know what will happen, I don't think, in the next year or two. Things could come back, things could get worse. But this is a pretty significant policy change where you're not only going to establish, I guess we established the SIPA, we codified it here last year, 2 years. I remember when we created the SIPA and session laws and tried to take it out the next session. And then we finally codified it and we had that fight. But now you're basically going to commit half of whatever goes into the SIPA into this account, which is great. But I just don't think we're at the point right now where we're already, I mean, maybe you're all ready to make that decision, but I'm certainly not, and I just think it's premature. So I appreciate the intent. I completely think it's worthwhile. But I find these to be really difficult because we're going to put something in that it's easy to go through once when no one's really thinking about the money, but trying to change this statute after we commit to it in future years is going to be really, really difficult.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Over the years that I've been in here, one of the common themes that I hear is to pay for we want to pay for it and not buy it on credit. And so at some point in time, you have to start saving for whatever it is that you don't want to buy on credit. And I know that there's some philosophical differences on how you do that, but this body needs understand, and I think we do. I think we understand that the prison situation is not good, and we're going to have to address it. But we probably ought to put some shekels away so that when a firm decision is made on whether we rebuild it where it's at, which I will just share with you, you don't build in clay. Clay is, that's Lloyd's personal view, but it can be done, but I don't know that that's the best place. So if we don't build it on clay, where do we build it? Do we build it through, something about building your house on a rock that rings true, and we kind of try and do that, and that may be the way we go. That may be cost prohibitive, but at the end of the day, we better have some pennies rat-holed in a main, someplace to where we can pay for it. This is, if we don't want to do it on things we don't have, this is, and you got to start early. And because that's coming up pretty quick, as the good speaker mentioned, it's going to be 6-7 years down the road now. It may be that we decide to, in that whole investigation, maybe we find that somebody can build a private prison for us and run it cheaper. But at least we'd have the money there to deal with it. And so I'd suggest that we really support, I feel like we should support it, because we got to have, if you're going to go to, if you're going to buy a new house, you better start saving now. If you're going to go to Disneyland, you better start saving now. And I think that's what we're trying to get accomplished.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I appreciate the good chairman of corporations. But really, that's going back to that debate a couple of years ago when we codified the SIP account, the Strategic Investments Project account, because we've always fought and had to struggle so hard to find a way to pay for stuff. There was never really anything, because we have these needs in the state that come that are before us. And so we set aside this account off investment earnings, and that hopefully we have, and that we can use for these needs of the state. So, and then I think back to like our founders in the Acts of Admission. There's penitentiary lands, trust lands in the state. There's what was called, the deaf and dumb school lands, University of Wyoming trust lands, and then, of course, our school section lands. So our founders knew the idea of saving and putting away money in perpetuity for these things. We have a little statutory mechanism where we're trying to save a little bit of money each budget year. I would say this, though. I think all I've heard is, thank goodness the people that came before us saved this money. Thank goodness the people that saved all this money. And so that's all we're trying to do for the 67th or 68th legislature, that they're going to have some options. And I firmly believe maybe having a private outfit build it and the public run it, there's a lot of options out there. But I think if you don't have any money set aside, even a partial down payment on this, then your options are pretty limited. You're going to force the 67th or 68th legislature to bond, to do lease purchase, or to cut somewhere, somehow, to come up with money to do it. And we know how hard that is. And so I think you take a little bit each year, and pretty soon 5 years goes by pretty quick. I don't know if the number's a quarter of a billion. It might be a half a billion. You look at the report, it's pretty expensive to go north of town and build on granite, like the good representative from Fremont talked about. So all those options, I think, will be out there for the folks who sit in these seats. In the newly remodeled Capitol, and we'll have to make. So I'd hope you'd... I'm going to vote for savings and not borrowing, and that's really what I think in the end is going to be our choices. So thank you, and I appreciate your support for the bill.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just echo what the good speaker had to say. We're putting the money away for savings. How we use it, we haven't determined yet. We don't know if... You'd do the same thing at home if you wanted to buy a truck. You'd start saving for it. And the cost of vehicles today, you better start saving early. Friend showed me his new truck, $72,000. In a few years, that truck's probably going to be $100,000. It's the same with this. If we don't start saving now, we end up in a few years saying, where do we get this kind of money out of our budget to start this? If you bond, and I've heard people say we want to bond, you'll have your debt service for 30 years, and that's just a mortgage payment to pay off that bond, and it's going to be expensive. You'll probably pay on $100 million, if you bond it for 30 years, you'll probably pay back $130 to $140 million. So it's just good practice. Put the money away over time, decide how you want to spend it, and spend it. And that's why we're setting up a separate account, so it can't be attacked and said, oh, gee, well, we know there's money there for the penitentiary. However, we've decided we wanted to have a really nice water park somewhere. A little strange, but that's the example. You start saving it now, you know it's going to be there. And those future legislators that will have to appropriate this money directly, it gives them something to work with. And that's why we're doing it the way we are. It's just the same way you'd buy a home, you'd buy a vehicle. You don't go down and buy a home and say, I don't have any money down. Wouldn't you much rather pay cash or for most of it up front, avoid those mortgage payments? I would.
Chairman Madden.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to have the bringer of this bill, or else the Speaker pro tem, simply, briefly, I should say, tell us what this SIPA percentage, this half, is going into now. In my mind, I got that picture we had last year at the budget session that I think it was the health facilities, and that's out, are going to be. I guess I want to know what's falling out and what have we accomplished before we start this on beginning June 30, 2019. Where's it going right now and up until June of 2019?
Vice Chairman Witters.
Thank you. I just received an excellent explanation from the good speaker. My previous question was, why are we putting what I would perceive to be a coffee can within the coffee can? I received a good answer. The statement was, right now, if we don't set it aside, it can be appropriated by the executive down the hall in the next budget. As they start going through that budget cycle again, if we don't set this aside, it can be in the budgeting process appropriated. And so that's why it's important to separate it out. So, and I figured if I asked that question and received a good answer, some of you might profit from it as well. This is making more sense now, and so I just wanted to share that with you.
Mr. Speaker.
Oh. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to answer the good chairman of revenue, let's talk 17-18 budget, which we're currently in. The SIPA accounts are used to fund current projects, health facilities, a little bit of community college, some of the capital renovation, and Casper office building. And those were combined with the one-time dollars we received from the federal government. And so in 17 and 18, those projects are all cleaned up and cleared up. So this bill starts in the 19-20 budget. So the SIPA, there is no current call or appropriations or commitments with that, because we just committed what we could in this budget. And so last year's capital construction bill only dealt with this current biennium. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman's won it, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate that explanation, but let me phrase it to you in a slightly different way. Last year's legislature already committed all the SIPA for this year and next year. So us in the 64th right now, you don't really have control over it because we've basically established that. So what we're doing now is telling the next legislature, the 65th, what they're going to be doing with money that we don't have yet, and we don't know how much it will be. I guess I just want to remind you all that, you know, we're the legislative branch. We're the appropriators. We have probably more power than you actually realize most of the time. Hey. And, I'm great with the explanation the chief executive can't, say in his budget message next year in 2 years where this money should be going, but we don't have to listen to that message. We have the authority in the budget we set to hold these funds. If we can hold the will of this body and the will of the body down the hall and come to a consensus, we can put this money in accounts through the budget without putting it in statute, that once it goes in statute, all it takes is a couple of key people to make sure you never overturn that statute. It's a lot easier when we're not ready for the amount of money we're talking about coming in here to just let this go through. But I'll tell you, it's not coming out. And it's a great savings tool. I mean, I've seen it work for another coffee can, for many coffee cans now for a decade. And it is a really good project, and it's great that we're saving money for the next big thing, even though it's 2.5 years away. But I would submit to you that we can do that through the budget. We don't have to do it through statute, and we don't have to tie the 65th legislature to something that, you know, they're not even elected yet. We may not be here, the current members, and they may have a different philosophy. And so I just get worried when we do things like this that we're committing this body and this, well, this state, really to something that the next year's, 2 years appropriators may not agree with, but they're stuck with. So I'd ask you to keep that in mind.
You want to talk? Speaker Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple things on that. We appropriated the money out of the SIPA last year in the budget session. It's in the CapCon bill, which is still in effect. We're not touching that money. We're not going after it. And under rules that we've come up with and a lot of good, solid work, we've pulled capital construction out of the budget. It's a separate bill so that it's not in the budget. You have to go into that bill if you want to take money out of the capital construction account. We just don't go into the budget and get it anymore like we had in the past. And that's another control on it so that the budget is really for the operation of the state. And that, if you really want it bad enough, you can go after it. Bring a bill to say you want to reopen CapCon. We aren't going to do that. We've established those funds. We've made a decision in this legislature, and we're going to go on with it. We're going to fund those state hospitals and the state facilities because that's a critical need in this state. Just the way, in the future, we'll have enough money to fund the penitentiary. And this is not going to be cheap by any stretch of the imagination. Very expensive construction. Poured concrete, heavily reinforced. You don't want the residents just walking in and out. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I think we've exhausted it. I'll call for the question.
Question's been called. Question being called. All those in favor of can't remember, Representative Nicholas's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it does so with the recommendation that bill number 262 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no.
No.
Okay. House bill 262 has passed the committee of the whole. Next bill for consideration is House bill 89. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 89, introduced by Representative Pelkey. Judges of First Class Cities, Retention Elections, an act relating to municipal judges of first class cities. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 89, Judges of First Class Cities, Retention Elections, respectfully reports, same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Furphy, Lindholm, Lone, and Swanitzer. Noes, Representatives Edwards, Ayer, and Sweeney. Signed, Representatives Swanitzer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Swanitzer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the committee of the whole rise to report to do so with the recommendation that House Bill 89 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments. And I would turn it over to the good representative from District 45.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Minority Whip Pelkey.
Thank you, sir. This is a bill that I've been kind of toying with the last couple of years. It's always bothered me that we have communities in which
the retention of judges. In other words, the exercise of power over the judicial branch of a municipal community is exercised either by the legislative body or by the executive. What I'm suggesting here is to change the means by which judges in those first-class cities in Wyoming are retained, not appointed, but retained. Right now, for a circuit court judge, district court judge, I apparently am speaking very loudly, so I'm going to back away. I try to accommodate. Circuit court judge, district court judge, Supreme Court judges, nominees or names are submitted to the judicial nominating committee. That committee submits three names to the governor, and the governor makes the appointment from that list of three candidates. Certainly we don't go through that for municipal court judges, but under the status quo right now, we have folks who submit an application to be a municipal court judge, and sometimes they narrow that field down to a certain number, and they appoint the final candidate to that position. What concerns me, though, is that retention of the judges is dependent on that same legislative body. I think that the system in place for circuit, district, and Supreme Court justices is designed to separate the branches of government and not allow influence from one over the other. And unfortunately, I don't think that's the situation in municipalities. And I think it's important that we consider that for the majority of our citizens, when they do encounter the judicial system, it's a system, it's generally at the municipal court level. Not a lot of us get arrested and end up in circuit court. Even fewer get arrested and end up in district court. But a lot of folks have traffic tickets, municipal violations, and all that. And simply what I'm trying to do in this bill is to create a means by which the voters, and not the city council, is the body that decides whether or not a judge should stay in office. Right now, the bill is designed with a provision that would call for retention votes every 4 years, which would be akin to what is circuit court judges now face. District court judges are up every 6 years. Supreme Court justices are up every 8 years. I anticipate a friendly amendment on second or third reading that will reduce that to 2 years. That would provide a tiered level all the way from municipal court judge to Supreme Court justice. So what I'd urge you to do is consider the need to separate the powers between branches of government, even at the municipal level, and I would appreciate your support for this bill. I'm open for any questions.
Right here. Representative Lone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At this time, I will move committee the whole amendment to number one. As discussed by the good representative who presented this bill, that in our committee meeting, one of the concerns was that municipalities, as they budget for their judges, that they have to do it annually because they have to do an annual budget, and they were concerned about trying to maintain funds for the judge for a four-year period. So, as we discussed, we would adjust that to 2 years, vice 4 years. So I just ask your favorable consideration on this amendment. Like I said, I discussed this with the bringer of the bill. It is a friendly amendment, and to that I leave it for question.
Mr. Chairman, I would concur that this is a friendly amendment. I have no objection to it at all.
Thank you. Question being called. All those in favor of a committee of the whole amendment number one, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. The amendment is adopted. Is there any other discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Zwanitzer's motion that the committee of the whole rises to report it do so with the recommendation that bill number 89 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Ooh, okay. All those that are in favor of House Bill 89, please stand. You can sit down. All those opposed, please stand. House Bill 89 passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill up for consideration is House Bill 106. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 106, introduced by Representative Blackburn. Change in Party Affiliation, an act relating to elections. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 106, Change in Party Affiliation, respectfully reports, same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Blackburn, Edwards, Ayer, Furphy, Lone, Sweeney. Noes, Representatives Byrd, Lindholm, and Zwanitzer. Signed, Representative Zwanitzer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Chairman Zwanitzer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move in the Committee of the Whole rise to report to do so with a recommendation that House Bill 106 do pass, and I will turn over the explanation to the good representative from District 42.
Representative Blackburn.
Mr. Speaker, ladies and gentlemen, I bring you this House Bill 106. It's a party affiliation change. It's basically to keep Republicans are switching to Democrats, and Democrats are switching from Republicans at the primary. I worked through the summer and asked the county clerk or the county people to be involved. I also had the SOS involved, so some of the language that was in here, they helped us put together. The big change is basically on page 3. Line 10, we're changing it from 14 days to 30 days. What I mean is 30 days before the primary, they have to have elected their party affiliation. If I have any. So I don't hear any questions. I guess I'll call for the question.
Somebody yell. Question. Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Zwanitzer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 106 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Majority Floor Leader Miller. Oh, well, keep your hand down. Okay, those in favor of the bill, please stand. 37. Okay. Please sit down. All those opposed, please stand. The bill passes, the House Bill 106 passes the Committee of the Whole. Now, Majority Floor Leader Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
Now what? You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Motion carries. Oh.
Well, the adoption of the... Oh. Once we read the...
We are getting the Committee of the Whole report as we speak. The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
February 1st, 2017. Mr. Speaker, our Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. House Bill 231, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 291, recommended do pass. House Bill 174, amended. Following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. House Bill 238, amended and further amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 195, recommended do pass. House Bill 250, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 182, amended and further amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 200, recommended do pass. House Bill 116, amended and further amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 60, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 197, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 225, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 262, recommended do pass. House Bill 89, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 106, recommended do pass. Signed, Representative Haley, Chairman.
I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed say no. Congratulations. Thank you, Representative Haley. We are now at that order of business of reports from standing committees.
House Bill 230, introduced by Representative Laux, Hemp Farming. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 230, Hemp Farming, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Baker, Weitman, Jennings, Kirkbride, Olson, Pelkey, Pannell, Salazar, and Renters. Signed, Representative Kirkbride, Chairman. House Bill 79, introduced by Appropriations, State Funds Equity Investments Pool, an act relating to public funds. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 79, State Funds Equity Investments Pool, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman. House Bill 267, introduced by Representative Overmuller, LLC and Corporations License Fees, an act relating to corporations and limited liability companies. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 267, LLC and Corporation License Fees, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, and Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman. House Bill 278, introduced by Representative Northrop, Special Non-Resident Hunting License Draw, an act relating to game and fish. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 278, Special Non-Resident Hunting License Draw, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, and Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman. House Bill 286, introduced by Representative Nicholas, Wyoming State Veterinary Biosafety Laboratory, an act relating to a state capital construction project. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 286, Wyoming State Veterinary Biosafety Laboratory, respectfully reports, same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, and Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman. House Bill 288, introduced by House Appropriations, Game and Fish Fees, an act relating to game and fish. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 288, Game and Fish Fees, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, and Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman. House Bill 289, introduced by House Appropriations. Motorboat Registration and Certificate Fee, an act relating to game and fish and motorboats. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 289, Motorboat Registration and Certificate Fee, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, and Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman.
Messages House, from the... I'm sorry. One more. More.
House Bill 270, introduced by Representative Salazar. Wolf Management Trophy Game Animal, an act relating to game and fish. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 270, Wolf Management Trophy Game Animal. Respectful report, same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Allen, Clem, Flitner, Freeman, Garrew, Haley, Halverson, McGuire, and Steinmetz. Signed, Representative Allen, Chairman. House Bill 254, introduced by Representative Harshman, Public Purpose Investments, an act relating to state investments. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 254, Public Purpose Investments, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representative Clausen, Crank, Ayer, Greer, Henderson, Lindholm, and Laux. No, Representative Gray. Excused, Representative Byrd. Signed, Representative Greer, Chairman.
Messages from the Senate.
Messages from the State Senate, February 1st, 2017. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 91, Small Water Projects. Ayes 27, noes 3. Message number 195. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 115, Malicious Cruelty to Animals. Ayes 29, noes 1. Message number 196. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File number 118, Food Freedom Act, Sales Locations. Ayes 30. Message number 197. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 122, Water Development Amendments. Ayes 26, noes 4. Message number 198. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File number 129, Sexual Assault, School Employee. Ayes 25, noes 5. Message number 199. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on the third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File number 132, Endow Initiative. Ayes 23, noes 7. Message number 200. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File number 151, Ignition Interlock. Ayes 25, noes 5. Message 201. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File number 154, Sex Offender Registration, Accessories. Ayes 29, noes 1. Message number 202. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File number 158, Depositions by Telephone. Ayes 29, noes 1. Message number 203. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File number 167, Workers' Compensation Rate Discount, Modification and Credit. Ayes 30. Message number 204. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File number 126, Guides and Outfitters, Penalties. Ayes 23, noes 7. Message number 205. Mr. Speaker, the Senate adopted the Committee of the Whole report, failing the bill listed below by the vote indicated. Senate File number 171, Civic Proficiency Examination, 2. Ayes 13, noes 17. Signed, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Before we move to adjourn, let's move to committee announcements, then we'll move motion to adjourn, and then the Cowgirls are playing San Diego State tonight, so before the final vote on adjournment, we're going to have to get our dynamic duo up here to lead us. But first things first, committee announcements. Chairman Kirkbride.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Judiciary Committee Number 1 will meet tomorrow morning at 7:30 in H-38 to consider two bills, House Bill 223, Concealed Weapons Permit Issuance, and House Bill 259, Child Battery and Child Abuse.
Chairman Northrop.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 4, Education, will meet upon adjournment in House 38. We're going to have House Bill 41, House Bill 150, House Bill 228, House Bill 255, House Bill 277, House Bill 283, and House Bill 292. Thank you.
Chairman Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, will meet upon adjournment tomorrow to study House Bill 280, Vehicle Registration Requirements, and House Bill 284, Vehicle Licenses Valid for 5 years. And that should clear what we've been assigned. If I'm incorrect on that, somebody let me know.
Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Committee of Corporations will meet tomorrow morning at 7:30 a.m. to hear five bills,
Each one of them, the sponsors have told me, will take 5 minutes or less, so maybe we'll be done by eight, but I doubt it. House Bill 263, Senior Citizen District Elections, 222, Background Checks, House Joint 10, Free and Fair Elections, House Bill 212, Statutory Gender References, and House Bill 282, Recount Results. Furthermore, we'll meet at lunch tomorrow in H37 upon noon recess to hear 266, Evaluation Requirements for Cities and Towns, 252, Management Council Membership, 276, Recording Legislative Meetings, and 269, Prohibited Questions on Job Applications.
Yeoman's work. Vice Chairman Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 5, Agriculture, will meet tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. in H36 to discuss the following bills: 198, Country of Origin Labeling; 204, Feeding Garbage to Swine and Permit Fees; House Bill 193, Animal Protection; and if time permits, we'll also hear House Bill 257, Community and School Access to Public Lands 2, and 261, Diversion Dam Operation and Turbidity Measure. Thank you.
Chairman Kirkbride.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The weekly legislative prayer breakfast will meet tomorrow morning at 6:30 in L51. We'll have a great breakfast and hear from John Cox, Director of the Department of Workforce Services.
Thank you. Chairman Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The good news is that the JAC will not meet tonight for the first time, I think, since we've been here. We will meet tomorrow at 8:30 to hear House Bill 279.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, general file for tomorrow will start with the following five bills: House Bill 288, House Bill 183, House Bill 221, House Bill 241, and House Bill 248. And, Mr. Speaker, with that, I move the House adjourn until 9 a.m. tomorrow, Thursday, February 2nd, 2017.
Okay, before we entertain that motion, we have our dynamic duo to lead us in Cowboy Joe. Oh.
Committee announcement.
Any other announcements? You've heard the majority floor leader's motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion carries. The House is adjourned until Thursday, February 2nd at 9 a.m.